Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Mendel Rivers to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner. The revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on reports from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lights of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he had been saving for just the right occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so goddamn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally screwed Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news, and no pictures of Harry Arm, women liberationists, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, or Engelbert Humperdinck. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised. Will not be televised. Not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brother. The revolution will be live.
Don't want to be involved in this one. This is going to be a blues number.
Yeah.
But first, I want to do a little bit of background on the blues. Say what it is. Like, there are six cardinal colors, and colors have always come to signify more than simply that particular shade, like redneck or got the blues. That's where you apply colors to something else, you know, to come up with what it is you're trying to say. So there are six cardinal colors: yellow, red, orange, green, blue, and purple. And there are 3,000 shades. And if you take these 3,000 shades and divide them by six, you'll come up with 500. Meaning there are at least 500 shades of the blue. For example, there's the I Ain't Got Me No Money Blues. There is it. I Ain't Got Me No Woman Blues. There's I Ain't Got Me No Money and I Ain't Got Me No Woman, which is the double blues. And for years it was thought that black people was the only one who could get the blues. So the blues hadn't come into no international type of fame. But lately we done had Frank Rizzo with the lie detector blues. We had the United States government talking about the energy crisis blues. And we're going to dedicate this next poem here to the Spearhead X. The X second in command in terms of this country. And the poem is called H2O GATE Blues. And if H2O is still water and GATE is still gate, what we're getting ready to deal on is the Watergate Blues. Let me see if I can dial this number right quick. Click. I'm sorry. The government you have elected is inoperative. Click. Inoperative. Just how blind will America be? The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all can see the plight and still cannot. Let me do that part again. Just how blind will America be? The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all can see the plight and claimed that we could not. Just how blind, America? Just as Vietnam exploded in the rice, snap, crackle, and pop could not stop people determined to be free. Just how blind will America be? The shock of a Vietnam defeat sent Republican donkeys scurrying down on Wall Street. And when the roll was called, it was Pepsi Cola and Phillips 66. Boeing, Dow, and Lockheed. Ask them what they're fighting for, and they'll never mention the economics of war. Ecological warfare, above all else, destroy the land. If we can't break the Asian world, we'll bomb the dikes and starve the man. America, the international Jekyll and Hyde, the land of a thousand disguises, sneaks up on you but rarely surprises. Plundering the Asian countryside in the name of Fu Manchu. Afraid of shoeless, undernourished Cambodians, while we strike big wheat bargains with Russia, our nuclear enemy. Just how blind, America? But tell me, who was around where Hell Bars died? And what was the cause of LBJ's untimely demise? And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, while America's face is drowning beneath that cesspool. Watergate. How long will the citizens sit and wait? It's looking like Europe in 38. Did they move to stop Hitler before it was too late? How long, America, before the consequences of keeping the school system segregated, allowing the press to be intimidated, watching the price of everything soar, and hearing complaints because the rich want more? It seems that Macbeth and not his lady went mad. We've let him eliminate the whole middle class. The dollar's the only thing we can't inflate, while the poor go on without a new minimum wage. But what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, and there are those who say America's face is drowning beneath that cesspool. What again? How much more evidence do the citizens need that the election was sabotaged by trickery and greed? And if this is so, and who we got didn't win, let's do the whole goddamn election over again. The obvious key to the whole charade would be to run down all of the games they played. Remember Dieter Beard and ITT, the slaughter of Attica, the CIA in Chile, knowing nothing about Allende at this time in the past, as I recollect. Augusta, Georgia, the nomination of Supreme Court Justice to head off the tapes. William Calley's executive interference in the image of John Wayne. Kent State, Jackson State, Southern Louisiana, hundreds of them authorized bombing raids. The chaining and gagging of Bobby Seale. Somebody tell these Maryland governors to be for real. We recall all of these events. The school, the water buggers in the Watergate wasn't no news. The thing that seems to justify all of our fears is that all this went down in the last 5 years. But tell me, what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, while America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. We leave America to ponder the image of justice from its new wave of leaders. Frank Rizzo, the high school graduate mayor of Philadelphia, whose ignorance is surpassed only by those who voted for him. Richard Daley, imperial Napoleonic mayor of Chicago, who took over from Al Capone and continued to implement the same tactics. George Wallace, Lester Maddow, Strom Thurmond, Ronald Reagan, an almost endless list that won't be missed when at last America is purged. And the silent White House with the James brothers once in command. But see the sauerkraut mafia men deserting the sinking White House ship and their main mindless megalomaniac Ahab. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. And what are we left with now? Bumper stickers that say free the Watergate 500. Spy movies of the same name with a cast of thousands. And that ominous phrase that if Nixon knew, Ag knew. But Ag didn't knew enough to stay out of jail. And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray. And there are those who swear they've seen King Richard. 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 Beneath that cesspool. What a game.
The Ron Rex Show. A Ron Rex Show on Beach here. Let's try that one just if I can get together. This has not been my night to get this show going, of course. Had a few technical difficulties. I can't seem to stay in the same time zone. And I don't think I'm really on the same planet, but who gives a shit? I don't. Anyway, hey, I'm glad to see everybody in the chat room tonight. That's cool. We got a really cool show tonight. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to play a clip that you're really going to want to listen to this. But really got some really good shit coming up here very soon, about next week. Oh, it's going to be kick-ass. Anyway, I need to get my co-host on here before she starts sending me bad messages. So let's bring the lovely, beautiful, talented Antoinette.
Antoinette.
I don't get it. God, I'm sorry. I'll go back to speech
class. Hello, Ron Ruck.
You got to remember, Anna, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to do that, but you know, I mean, you can't call me retard no more. Now you got to call me special. You know, it's like
you're a special kind of retard.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I love you. They changed the word from like shell shock, you know, to post stress disorder or combat fatigue. You know, they changed the meaning of a word or whatever saying. So it's that. Yeah, I rode on the little short yellow bus, you know, so that was crazy. But,
yeah.
Well, I got this clip here.
Yes, and I think it'd be good if we break it up into maybe like every 10 or 15 minutes and then open it up to discussion.
No, I can't be that nice to people.
Yeah, because you got to explain what's going on.
Well, I'm not into teach them in entertainment business.
Well, I'm sorry. You have to teach and entertain.
Hang on. Hold on. Y'all give me about 20 minutes. I need to look at my contract. Hold on. Let's see.
You don't have time for that. I charge by the minute.
I'm just joking.
Exactly. I charge $10,000 a minute.
That's the whole idea of the format of this show is to help educate people, wake them up.
That's right.
Right. So I want to play this clip. We're going to listen to it. You're going to kick back and listen to it for a little while. And then once it's, well, I'll try to cut up. I don't know. And it's PM, we'll go back and forth on it. We'll just, you know, you tell me when to stop, and I'll stop. And but I also have people on the line, too. So that's here's where, you know what I'm saying?
Well, Perry said to keep him on hold.
Okay. Well, I'm not in the chat room.
He left a message on the chat room.
I got 404 on the line, too.
Okay. Sister Agonia said she's going to have to listen to the archive. Because every few minutes she has to refresh.
I wonder what the problem is.
Okay, she's back again.
How many pages?
I don't know. See, she hasn't used BTR in years, so you know how just BTR can be funny. And we have a guest. Hello, guest.
You've got
BTR funny. On your back.
No. Pardon me? Not the good folks at BTR. No, they're really great folks. Yeah.
She said probably her old computer. Sister Gonya, honestly and truly, BTR can be a mess.
Sometimes. Well, is that computer old where you have to hand start it like an old Model A Ford? Is that how old it is? Well, I'm just asking, you know. I'm just joking. You know, it's a joke. Sorry. Didn't mean to pinch, you know. I didn't know they still sold that type of Apple computer anymore. You know, remember that in, you know, high school, the Apple computer. They had Apple II computer up.
Uh-huh.
You know, the big old clunky thing, the green screen color was never thought of. It's like he's back in the 50s, you know, before color TV came out. The green screen.
Okay, keep on, youngster.
Yes, ma'am. All right.
I wasn't born in the 50s, but keep on, youngster. And they didn't have computers for the public in the
50s. I'm not going to say a word.
Yes, give the opening up for the
All right,
for the clip, please.
Okay, that clip. That clip.
Oh, she's
going
to call in to see if she can listen by her phone. Sister Gonya, when you're ready. Oh, she probably can't hear me.
Well, all right. What we're going to listen to is a clip on All the Wars of Bankers is the name of the clip. It's about how the banks are involved with all this bullshit we go through all the time. So I just think it'd be very enlightening for everybody to catch on to this a little bit to see how the corporate control is. I mean, that's what it is. It's, you know what? You hear conspiracy theorists talk about all the time. You have, one order, one agenda, which there probably is. And, you know, a lot of people, it's just a conspiracy theory. I think there's a lot more truth to it than that. You know, I think there's a lot to it. And people just ain't catching on to what the actual, who is controlling the system, who's controlling us, what's going on with us. So anyway, I'm going to play this clip, and I'll go, once you go to a certain part, I'll go ahead and stop it. And I might open the phone lines up. I don't know. I'm confused. Like I told you, I'm special. I should get a check. Anyway. But anyway, yeah, so let's get this started. Everybody just hang tight. Say something in the chat room, whatever, cuss me out, whatever you want to do. But as long as you tell the truth, I'll dig you, you know. Anyway, let's get this puppy started. Hang tight, folks.
Okay.
Now, I want to share a story with you, and this is actually an article that I wrote over the weekend called All Wars Are Bankers' Wars. And I went in, I did a lot of research, it's posted to the front page of WhatReallyHappened.com. I understand it's already gone viral, it's being reposted around the web. But I wanted to basically tell it to you here on the radio show. And it's a very long story, we're probably going to take the rest of the hour to do it. But it's something that you need to understand, that all of these wars and assassinations that we're told are crazed, low nut assassins, or weapons of mass destruction, or bringing democracy, all of them track back to the private central bankers as the initiating event. And the more you study this, the more you will realize all the wars are wars for the bankers, for the private central bankers. And I know a lot of people are going to have difficulty comprehending this, just how many of these wars we have fought as a nation were fought for no other purpose than to force private central banks onto nations that did not want them. So we're going to have a few examples so you understand why at this particular time in history the United States government is mired in so many wars against so many foreign nations. And there's plenty of precedents for this. Now, going back to the beginning, the United States fought the American Revolution primarily over King George III's Currency Act, which forced the colonists to abandon their own government-issued currencies and conduct business only using printed banknotes borrowed at interest from the Bank of England. If you go back to the writings of Ben Franklin, direct quote, the refusal of King George III to allow the colonies to operate an honest money system, which freed the ordinary man from the clutches of the money manipulators, was probably the prime cause of the revolution. That's Ben Franklin. Now, our public schools don't teach that because you're not supposed to know that the bankers were really behind the American Revolution. After the Revolution, the United States adopted a revolutionary, radically different economic system in which the government issued its own value-based currency so that private banks couldn't skim the wealth of the people through interest-bearing banknotes. So the American Revolution was fought primarily to free the American people from King George III's Currency Act, which ordered them to conduct all business using printed banknotes borrowed at interest from the Bank of England. So the Bank of England was just, you know, raking in wealth from the labor of the American people in exchange for ink and paper. And that fueled the anger that led to the American Revolution. Your public schools don't spend a lot of time on that, but that was really what it was all about. So the revolution was over, the United States was born, but the private bankers are nothing if not dedicated to their schemes to acquire other people's wealth, and they knew full well how easy it is to corrupt a nation's leaders. Now, just 1 year after Mayor Amschel Rothschild had uttered his infamous, "Let me issue and control the nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws," private bankers succeeded in setting up a new private central bank called the First Bank of the United States, largely through the efforts of the Rothschilds' chief supporter in the United States, Alexander Hamilton. Now, this First Bank of the United States was founded in 1791, and by the end of its 20-year charter, the First Bank of the United States had almost ruined the nation's economy while enriching the bank's owners. As a result, Congress refused to renew the charter and signaled their intention to go back to a state-issued value-based currency on which the people paid no interest at all to any banker. This resulted in a threat from Nathan Mayer Rothschild against the U.S. government. Quote, "Either the application for renewal of the charter is granted, or the United States will find itself involved in a most disastrous war," end quote. Congress still refused to renew the charter for the First Bank of the United States, whereupon Nathan Mayer Rothschild railed, quote, "Teach those impudent Americans a lesson. Bring them back to colonial status," end quote. Financed by the Rothschild-controlled Bank of England, Britain then launched the War of 1812 to recolonize the United States and force them back into the slavery of the Bank of England's banknotes, or to plunge the United States into so much debt they would be forced to accept a new private central bank. And the plan worked. Even though the United States won the War of 1812, Congress was forced to grant a new charter for yet another private bank, issuing the public currency as loans at interest, the Second Bank of the United States. Once again, private bankers were in control of the nation's money supply and cared not who made the laws or how many British or American soldiers had to die for it. So once again, the nation was plunged into debt, unemployment, poverty by the predations of the private central bank, and in 1832, Andrew Jackson successfully campaigned for his second term as president under the slogan, "Jackson and No Bank." True to his word, Jackson succeeded in blocking the renewal of the charter for the Second Bank of the United States of America. And this was where that famous quote came from Andrew Jackson. Quote, "Gentlemen, I too have been a close observer of the doings of the Bank of the United States. I have had men watching you for a long time, and I am convinced that you've used the funds of the banks to speculate in the breadstuffs of the country. When you won, you divided the profits amongst you, and when you lost, you charged it to the bank. You tell me that if I take the deposits from the bank and annul the charter, I shall ruin 10,000 families. That may be true, gentlemen, but that is your sin. Should I let you go on, you will ruin 50,000 families, and that would be my sin. You are a den of vipers and thieves. I've determined to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out," end quote. Andrew Jackson. Shortly after the charter for the Second Bank of the United States expired, there was an assassination attempt on Andrew Jackson, and it failed when both pistols used by the assassin, Richard Lawrence, failed to fire. Later on, Lawrence explained the motive for the assassination by saying that with President Jackson dead, money would be more plenty. So it was an assassination motivated by the interests of the bankers. Now, our public school system is as subservient to the bankers' wishes to keep certain history from you, just as the corporate media is subservient to Monsanto's wishes to keep the dangers of GMOs from you, and the global warming cult's wishes to conceal from you the fact that Earth has actually been cooling for the last 16 years. So it should probably be no surprise that the financial dimension of the Civil War are not well known to the average American. It's portrayed in our history books and our popular media as an internal dispute over slavery. But in fact, it was a war with global implications. When the Confederacy seceded from the United States, the bankers once again saw the opportunity for a rich harvest of debt and offered to fund Lincoln's efforts to bring the South back into the Union at 30% interest. Lincoln remarked that he would not free the black man by enslaving the white man to the bankers, and using his authority as president, issued a new government currency, the greenback. This was a direct threat to the wealth and power of the central bankers, who quickly responded. This is a quote from the London Times following Lincoln's issuance of the greenbacks. Quote, "If this mischievous financial policy, which has its origin in North America, shall become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debt and be without debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous without precedent in the history of the world. The brains and wealth of all countries will go to North America. That country must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe." So, goaded by the private bankers, much of Europe supported the Confederacy against the Union, with the expectation that victory over Lincoln would mean the end of the greenback. France and Britain seriously considered an outright invasion on the United States in support of the Confederacy, but they were held at bay by Russia. A little bit of history most Americans don't understand. Russia came to the aid of Lincoln's Union during this crisis. Now, at that time, Russia had just ended their serfdom system, and they had a state central bank similar to the system the United States had been founded on. Now, free of European intervention, the Union won the war, and Lincoln announced his intention to go on issuing the greenbacks. Following Lincoln's assassination, the greenbacks were pulled from circulation, and the American people forced to go back to an economy based on banknotes borrowed at interest from the private bankers. So finally, in 1913, the private central bankers of Europe, in particular the Rothschilds of Great Britain, the Warburgs of Germany, met with their American financial collaborators on Jekyll Island, Georgia, to form a new banking cartel with the express purpose of forming the Third Bank of the United States, with the aim of placing complete control of the United States money supply once again under the control of private bankers. Owing to hostility over the previous banks of the United States, the name of this third bank was changed to the Federal Reserve, in order to grant the new bank a quasi-governmental image. But in fact, it is a privately owned bank. It's no more federal than Federal Express. In fact, last year, the Federal Reserve successfully rebuffed a Freedom of Information lawsuit by Bloomberg News on the grounds that as a private banking corporation and not actually a part of the U.S. government, the Freedom of Information Act did not apply to the operators of the Federal Reserve. So 1913 proved to be a transformative year for the nation's economy. First, with Congress' passage of the 16th Income Tax Amendment and the false claim it had been ratified. Here's another direct quote. "I think if you were to go back and try and find and review the ratification for the 16th Amendment, which was the Internal Revenue, the income tax, I think if you went back and examined that carefully, you would find that a sufficient number of states never ratified that amendment," end quote. That's U.S. District Court Judge James C. Fox in Sullivan versus United States, 2003. Later that same year, 1913, and apparently unwilling to risk another questionable amendment, Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act over the Christmas holiday 1913, while members of Congress opposed to the measure were at home. This was a very underhanded deal, as the Constitution explicitly vests Congress with the authority to issue the public currency, does not authorize its delegation, and thus would have required a new amendment to transfer that authority to a private bank. But pass it, Congress did, and President Woodrow Wilson signed it as he promised the bankers he would in exchange for generous campaign contributions. Now, President Wilson later regretted that decision. You've probably heard this quote before, but you're going to get it again. Quote, "I am a most unhappy man. I have unwittingly ruined my country. A great industrial nation is now controlled by a system of credit. We are no longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men." That was Woodrow Wilson writing in 1919. Now, 1 year after the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, World War I started. And it is important to remember that prior to the creation of the Federal Reserve, there was no such thing as a world war. Now, World War I actually started between Austria-Hungary and Serbia, but quickly shifted to focus on Germany. Why Germany? They didn't start the war. Why was Germany the villain in World War I? Well, the real reason was their industrial capacity was seen as an economic threat to Great Britain. Great Britain's pound was already in decline at the time because too much economic emphasis was on banking and finance and not enough was on agricultural development, industrial development, and infrastructure. It's very much like the situation we have in the United States right now. All the financial operatives, they want to play the Wall Street games, and other parts of the economy are being neglected. We've lost a great deal of our manufacturing. We're not the agricultural exporter we used to be because everybody's over there at Wall Street playing in that giant open-air casino. Now, pre-war Germany did have a private central bank, but it was under strict control by the German government to keep inflation at reasonable levels and to make sure that all of the German economy was being properly funded, just like Putin did with their state, their central bank about a month ago. Under government control, by the German government, investment was guaranteed to internal economic development, and as a result, Germany had become a major manufacturing technological power. They were exporting products that Great Britain could not compete with. So in the media of the day, Germany was portrayed as the main opponent of World War I, and not just defeated, it was flattened. Now, following the Treaty of Versailles, Germany was ordered to pay the war costs of all the participating nations, even though Germany had not started that war. This amounted to three times the value of all of Germany itself. Germany's private central bank, to which the German government had gone deeply into debt to pay the cost of the wars, was allowed to break free of government control. That led to the massive inflation of the Weimar Republic, followed permanently trapping the German people in endless debt, and money speculators were running rampant. And it led to these situations where you had literally a whole basket full of paper notes to get a loaf of bread. Now, when the Weimar Republic collapsed economically, it opened the door for the National Socialists to take power. Their first financial move was to issue their own state currency, which was not borrowed from private central banks. It was based on a unit of value, not a unit of debt. Freed from having to pay interest on the money in circulation, Germany blossomed and quickly began to rebuild its industry. It was an amazing transformation to see. The media called it the German miracle. Time magazine lionized Hitler for the amazing improvement of life for the German people and the explosion of German industry, and they even named him Time magazine's Man of the Year in 1938. And then once again, Germany's prosperity and freedom from a private central bank loaning the public currency at interest became a threat to other nations and other powers. I have a couple of quotes here from Winston Churchill that tells you what was really going through the minds of Europe in the years leading up to World War II. Quote, should Germany merchandise again, which means do business, should Germany merchandise again in the next 50 years, we have led this war, World War I, in vain. That was Winston Churchill writing in the Times in 1919. Another quote. Quote, we will force this war upon Hitler if he wants it or not, end quote. Winston Churchill in an 1936 radio broadcast. Quote, Germany becomes too powerful. We have to crush it, end quote. Winston Churchill in November 1936 speaking to U.S. General Robert Wood. Quote, this war is an English war, and its goal is the destruction of Germany. Winston Churchill in autumn 1939 broadcast. So it was all about economics and profitability. Now, Germany's state-issued value-based currency was also a direct threat to the wealth and power of the private central banks around the world. And as early as 1933, they started to organize a global boycott against Germany to strangle this upstart ruler who thought he could run his nation without a private central bank. Now, it had been the case in World War I, Great Britain and other nations threatened by Germany's economic power looked for an excuse to go to war. And as public anger in Germany grew over the boycott, Hitler foolishly gave them that excuse. Years later, in a spirit of candor, the real reasons for the war were made clear. Quote, the war wasn't only about abolishing fascism, but to conquer sales markets. We could have, if we had intended so, prevented this war from breaking out without doing one shot, but we didn't want to. And
okay. All right. Let me stop there for a minute. They had to provoke the war for economics. There we go. Okay, I'm going to open up the phones, everybody. So y'all want to say something about it, bring it on. Everything this man's talked about, I've talked about several times. And I know, you know, a lot of people. So anyway, all the phones are going to be opened up, so you're all free to talk about this. So say whatever you need to say about it. But there you go. What happened.
Ron.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so this still falls into the pattern with the wars that we're in now and then with this uprising that they're using to go into Syria. So all the wars are banking wars. Since the oil prices is going to go up, go up again when we go into Syria, as they did with being over in Iraq.
Right. There's a Russian, like when we had first the Gulf, when the war started, you know, with little W, people flipped out. I mean, they were hitting gas stations hard. You know, I've seen people line up gas stations getting cans filled, whatever they fill up. I watched gas stations go dry. I mean, within an hour, you know. But, you know, man, it, you know, when Hitler killed the Jews, that was the reason why we went over there. But in reality, it was not, you know. But, I mean, yeah, I want to believe that. But I don't know. That's always a question of history, which I don't have the answers to that one. But I will research it and find out. But you know, now we got these Syrian people laying there dead, saying a chemical attack, and then Obama's saying it's the red line, and they've crossed it type deal. You know, so now we're positioned. Yeah. We've been on position for a long period of time. We've been sitting over there. I know we have. We just don't instantly appear there unless they have some type of a transformer thing like Star Trek's got that kicked them over that fast. But, yeah, I mean, but their reason is going to be is because of humanity. And go over and fix it, and you know, get it picked up. So you know, that's what we're looking at. Same thing, same scenario. It's like plays been playing over again in the playbook. You know, just in a different country, different way. But you know,
they want to feed him. Well, I told him to feed him. He gonna eat like Chad does.
Yeah, Perry has to stay muted. He was.
Okay.
Yeah, so unless anyone else has pushed one, I guess it's just, you know, you're explaining up to this point. And so that's the whole reason for, it goes back to, still back over to England now. Now unless I'm, Sister Gonya said she pushed one.
Okay.
So
she wants to say
something. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to interject that. You know, Russia just nationalized their central bank, and that's the same thing they killed JFK for when he printed the silver certificates. And I know there used to be three nations left that had not submitted to the central banking monetary system, and I know Iran is one of them, North Korea is another one. It used to be Iraq, but we see what they just did to Iraq, and Libya was pulling out of it too.
Right.
So I heard you talking about the gasoline. Well, they are, a lot of people are saying, when I say they, you know, different people that are talking about geopolitics and so forth, that the problem today is that since the United States economy is so weak and Russia's economy is like Germany's economy was when the guy was just explained. And so they're afraid what's going to happen is, since the United States is exporting most of their food and products and everything, that they're going to use nukes. That's what
could be
the concern. Because
right,
they don't have an economy. When in World War One, the United States was strong economically. Also in World War Two, they were strong, like Russia is now. And you know, so that's what they're afraid of, that the United States can't sustain a war. And Russia, Putin has already said that they're going to bog them down like they did in Vietnam. So that's all I have to say.
Well, you know, Obama even said it here this, you know, past week, that it's expensive. You know, this is expensive to do this. You know, to go.
Yeah, and you know, the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, China, India, and several other countries have signed on, are now trading in their own currencies. They are dropping the dollar, and they're not buying any bonds. That's why Bernanke is printing $85 billion a month.
Yeah, his first statement was 40.
Wow.
His first day was 40 to the system. But, to keep it alive, it's dead. It's a dead system. Over. I mean, it's been over. And nobody believes me. Ron, you're crazy. Money always be your bullshit. I have some bad news for you. You're spending and buying on a promise.
And, you know, here's the thing. What I understand is this is done purposely. They attack nations through their currency, drive their currency to nothing, and then the IMF comes in and say, hey, you guys, your currency is no good anymore. Hey, how about hooking up with the dollar?
Right.
And then the
right.
IMF gives them loans, and then you know, like Ecuador, now they have three products that they sell on the open market, shrimp, oil, and one other product, and so that's the only way. They have no currency of their own. They're dependent on the dollar. So, you know,
right.
if they change the price of their exports, then their country is suffering. The people are hungry, and they have no currency. So that's what,
right.
you know. But anyway, that's it. I don't want to get too far
so
into it.
You're fine. You're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Yeah, you're exactly right. That's the way the game's played. If they don't have a piece of the action, they get pissed off.
Yeah, they'll bomb you back
happens.
Into the Stone Age.
Right. We're gonna. If you don't give us a piece of the action, your ass is grass, and we're a lot more. You know, that's
right.
the way they do it. Exactly.
And
it comes back to that one word I hate more than any word ever. I'd rather be called a straight-up motherfucker, asshole. But
mm-hmm.
the one word I never want to be called is greedy. Even
mm-hmm.
though I am. You know, even
mm-hmm.
I'm tired of tree bark, swear to God, just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, but
greed
is an ugly, ugly thing, man. It's an ugly thing. It makes people do things. And governments are doing the things. The bank, I mean, it's all greed. People are doing this. These people.
But how,
you know?
Ron? How I know Antoinette wants to come in, so I'll wait. She was trying
no,
to.
No,
say
no, no. Go ahead, sister.
I was going to ask a question. How can it be greed when the very people that are controlling the monetary system of the world through force create money? Well, quote money, because we know it's not really money. We know we only have credit and debt, and we have fiat currency, not really money, because money is something of substance.
Right.
So how can it be greed if the very people, I mean, you know, that print $85 billion a month, they don't need any money? So it must
right.
be about something else. It's about power. Yeah. And do you know they've written books where they literally stated, and I have the title of the book, where they stated in writing that they do not want the what they call the, quote, third world countries to ever be able to develop. The book is called The Battle for the Mind by William Sergeant, and they literally said they will create irrational cults, they'll plant beliefs in people's mind, anything to keep them from being able to develop their own countries, their own nations. And remember, Obama just went over to Senegal and told them people over there, with the, you know, it's unbelievable. They can't have air conditioning in the cars, because if they do, the world will just be implode. Did you hear about that?
Yes. Okay,
yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question about the thing with greed. Okay. They print the money, they do all that, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's right. But here's what it really is. It's been quoted before. You control the money, you control everything. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
have the ultimate power.
Mm-hmm.
You're next to being a god.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ultimate greed, is to portray that you are a god like the Romans did and all that
mm-hmm.
crazy shit. So that
mm-hmm.
it's a mental issue. I think it's a mental thing. And that's
yes.
what they did. That's, they want the maximum of all. That's
mm-hmm.
the complete, total equation of greed. The
yeah,
total
I guess you...
maximum
I can,
load.
I everything. Can see where you're coming
planet.
From. If somebody
I want to
puts themselves...
the world, and that's where I'm going to do it. You know,
and everybody else is going to be our serfs, and they're going to supply what we need, and they're
right.
useless eaters, and we don't care because we don't
right.
need them anymore. We got robots now.
Well, okay, now let me give you an example where people don't want to catch on this, which I think is kind of funny. You know, you'll see a science fiction movie, and this big evil person or entity, whatever it is, wants to control the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people are sitting there, they're in the shock and awe of it. I'm sitting there saying, it's too late. Somebody already has.
Oh,
you know?
They've been doing it for over 2,000 years, as far as we know. This goes
right.
all the way back to Babylon.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
and it's always been. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ron.
The quest of fire. When fire
yeah,
was
it's all yes. That's
you know,
it.
Back,
that's
way
it.
Back.
Prometheus.
Even back further than that, you know, before
mm-hmm.
fire was even thought of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just
yeah.
It starts with. It's a part of active nature from the beginning of it. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? That's how our animals act. It's the domination and control. Control of the herd, control of the pack. And
well,
now,
some people seem to think that the people that are doing this, which we don't know who they are. They
right,
bander around Rothschild and Rockefeller. But
right.
the real ones doing it, we don't know their names and we don't know anything about them. But they claim that these beings are, I've lost my point. I was getting ready to make a point, but it's gone. So
that's
I'll be
okay.
quiet. I'm going to mute out now. I said enough.
She said the magic words. I'll
okay.
be quiet.
No. Sister Gonya, that is, there is a person that is another talk show host now, and one of his key phrases is he'll be quiet.
Okay, all right, I get it. But I know what I was getting ready to say. They're called intra-species predators.
Right,
what is that?
Okay.
Yeah, in other words, they don't have the empathy of regular human beings. They see us as ants, animals.
Wow.
Right. Herd.
Is
yeah.
that, now, does that that's tie it. In with what they call the reptilians?
Well, you know, that's one way of expressing, you know, we got three parts of the brain, frontal lobe, limbic, and reptilian. So somebody chooses to operate on the low level where they have no empathy for other human beings. They can bomb and kill up 1.5 million, 200 million. They don't care. They can't be human. I don't consider that to be human.
No, I don't.
So if you
either.
Want to call them reptilians or whatever, they're intra-species predators. That's what I call them.
They're not right.
Oh,
put it
okay.
that way. They have no care, period.
They have no empathy. No,
yeah,
they can't feel. They have
they
no conscience. Right. They can't have.
No emotion.
They can't be human.
Right. No emotion. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I call them
I'm shut. I'm gone.
No, you're okay. You're okay, sweetheart. Don't
no,
worry about that. No, that's
going,
what it's
yeah.
all about. That's what the show's all about. Well, okay.
Okay,
wait. Yeah, it's wild, man. But anyway, let's go ahead and jump back to this clip for a while and listen to some more of this real quick and we'll get back to the phones real quick. So, everybody, I'll mute everybody out, but you'll still be online. You'll still be with me. Just hang tight. Don't hang up. Stick around. We're going to listen to this flick, and we're going to get back into this really good. Really good. Sweet. All right.
Okay.
I get my
great.
Shit together. I'll be right with you.
This. One more quote here. Quote, Germany's unforgivable crime before World War II was to loosen its economy out of the world trade system and to build up an independent exchange system from which the world finance couldn't profit anymore. We butchered the wrong pig, end quote. Winston Churchill writing in his book, The Second World War. Now, a little side note, we're going to actually step back in time to the years before World War II. A little bit of history a lot of Americans are still completely unaware of. And it involves a gentleman by the name of Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler. In 1933, Wall Street bankers and financiers had bankrolled the successful rise to power of Hitler and Mussolini, Brown Brothers Harriman in New York, and they're still there. I saw them when I was there for the 9/11 anniversary. They were financing Hitler right up to the day war was declared with Germany. And these Wall Street financiers decided that a fascist dictatorship in the United States, based on the one Mussolini had in Italy, was going to be far better for their business interests than Roosevelt's New Deal, which threatened massive wealth redistribution to recapitalize the working and middle classes of America. So the Wall Street tycoons recruited General Butler to lead the overthrow of the U.S. government and install a Secretary of General Affairs who would be answerable to Wall Street and not the people, would crush social unrest and shut down all the labor unions. General Butler pretended to go along with the scheme, but then exposed the plot to Congress. So they recruited Major General, Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler to lead this coup d'etat because Butler was very popular with the soldiers and his image as part of this move would help convince the military this was the right thing to do. Now, to his credit, Major General Smedley Butler, remembering his oath to the Constitution, pretended to go along with the scheme but then exposed the plot to the United States Congress. Congress, then as now in the pocket of Wall Street bankers, refused to act. When Roosevelt learned of the planned coup, he demanded the arrest of the plotters, but the plotters simply reminded Roosevelt that if any one of them were sent to prison, their friends on Wall Street would deliberately collapse the still fragile U.S. economy and blame Roosevelt for it. So Roosevelt was unable to do anything about this attempted coup d'etat until the start of World War II, at which time he prosecuted many of the plotters under the Trading with the Enemy Act. Now, mostly it was glossed over. Oh, it's just a rumor, unfounded. It's a wacko conspiracy theory. But in 1967, the congressional minutes of Smedley Butler's revelation to Congress of the coup were finally released to the public. You ever see this movie, 7 Days in May, Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, about an attempted military takeover of the United States of America? It was based loosely on this story. But, of course, in the movie, the bankers being behind the Burt Lancaster character was completely removed from the script here. Now, Smedley Butler is also famous for writing a work called War is a Racket, and I would like to read you a quote from that. Quote, I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service as a member of our country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. And during that period, I spent more of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I suspected I was just part of a racket at the time. Now I'm sure of it. Like all members of the military profession, I never had an original thought until after I left the service. My mental faculties remained in suspended animation while I obeyed the orders of the higher-ups. This is typical with everyone in the military service. Thus, I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. The record of racketeering is long. I helped purify Nicaragua for the International Banking House of Brown Brothers in 1909 through 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that the Standard Oil went its way unmolested. During those years, I had, as the boys in the back room would say, a swell racket. I was rewarded with honors, medals, and promotion. Looking back on it, I feel I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate his racket in 3 city districts. I operated on 3 continents. General Smedley Butler, former U.S. Marine Corps Commandant, and he wrote that in 1935. So, now moving forward here. As president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy understood the predatory nature of private central banking. He understood why Andrew Jackson fought so hard to end the Second Bank of the United States. So Kennedy wrote and signed Executive Order 11110, which ordered the U.S. Treasury to issue a new public currency called the United States Note. Now, Kennedy's United States Notes were not borrowed from the Federal Reserve. They were created by the U.S. government and backed by the silver stockpiles held by the U.S. government. It represented a return to the system of economics the United States had been founded on, and it was perfectly legal for Kennedy to do so under the Constitution. All told, some $4.5 billion went into the public circulation, which eroded interest payments to the Federal Reserve and loosened their control over the nation. 5 months after signing Executive Order 11110, John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, and the United States notes pulled from circulation and destroyed. Following Kennedy's assassination, John J. McCloy, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank and president of the World Bank, was named to the Warren Commission. Now, I don't care how good a banker he is. He's not qualified to be investigating a murder, which is what we were told the Warren Commission was all about, to get the truth of the assassination. But we all know that the Warren Commission was there to cover up what was going on. And obviously, we can presume safely that John J. McCloy's presence on the Warren Commission was to make sure the American public never got even a hint of the financial dimensions behind the assassination. So, as we enter the 11th year of what I am certain future history will most certainly describe as World War III, we need to examine the financial dimensions behind all these wars. Why are we here? Why are our children being killed and crippled? Is this another war for the profit of the private central bankers? And the answer is yes. Now, toward the end of World War II, when it became obvious that the Allies were going to win and dictate the post-war political environment, the major world economic powers met at Bretton Woods, a luxury resort in New Hampshire, in July of 1944, and they hammered out the Bretton Woods Agreement for International Finance. The British pound lost its position as the global trade and reserve currency to the U.S. dollar. There are indications this was part of the price demanded by Roosevelt in exchange for U.S. entry into the war. Now, absent the economic advantages of being the world's go-to currency, Britain was forced to nationalize their Bank of England in 1946. The Bretton Woods Agreement, ratified in 1945, in addition to making the dollar the global reserve and trade currency, obligated the signatory nations to tie their currencies to the dollar. The nations that ratified Bretton Woods did so on 2 conditions. The first was that the Federal Reserve would refrain from overprinting the dollar, basically as a means to loot real products and produce from other nations in exchange for ink and paper. It basically was an imperial tax imposed by the U.S. economic system on the rest of the world. That assurance of no overprinting was supposedly backed up by the second requirement, which was that the U.S. dollar would always be convertible back to gold by the U.S. government at $35 an ounce. Now, of course, the Federal Reserve, being a private bank and not answerable to the U.S. government, did in fact start overprinting paper dollars, which were sent to other nations around the world, and under Bretton Woods, they had to send back products and produce and raw materials at full value. And much of the perceived American prosperity of the 1950s and 60s was the result of these foreign nations having to send real raw materials, goods, produce, back to the United States in exchange for these little pieces of paper with ink all over them, because they were forced to accept these paper notes as being worth $35 per ounce of gold. Then in 1970, France started looking at this huge pile of printed paper notes sitting in their bank vaults, for which real French product like wine and cheese had been traded, and it notified the United States government that they would exercise their option under Bretton Woods to return all those paper notes for gold at the agreed-upon $35 per ounce exchange rate. The problem was the United States had nowhere near the gold to redeem all those paper notes. So on August 15, 1971, Richard Nixon temporarily, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more, suspended gold convertibility of the U.S. Federal Reserve notes. This Nixon shock, as it was termed at the time, effectively ended Bretton Woods, and many global currencies started to delink from the U.S. dollar. And it created another problem, because the United States had been collateralizing their loans, money borrowed from other governments and foreign investors, with the American nation's gold reserves. And with the awareness that there wasn't enough gold to redeem all the Federal Reserve notes, lenders to the U.S. were starting to wonder, did the U.S. government have enough gold to cover, collateralize their outstanding debts? Foreign nations began to get very nervous about the loans to the United States, and they were understandably reluctant to loan any additional money without some form of collateral. So what Richard Nixon did is he founded the environmental movement with the EPA and its various programs like wilderness zones and roadless areas and heritage rivers, wetlands, and all these other little different programs, which all took vast areas of public lands and made them off limits to the American people, who are technically the owner of all those lands. But Nixon had no concern for the environment, and the real purpose of this land grab, under the guise of the environment, was to pledge those pristine lands and their vast mineral resources as collateral on the outstanding national debt. The multitude of all these different programs was simply to conceal the scale of the land grab and collateralization of the American people's heritage. And it actually today covers almost 25% of the entire nation, is now locked up by these EPA programs and pledged as collateral on government borrowing. Now, with open lands, available lands for collateralization already in short supply, the U.S. government embarked on a new program to shore up sagging international demand for the dollar. The United States approached the world's oil-producing nations, mostly in the Middle East, and offered them a deal. In exchange for only selling their oil for dollars, the United States would guarantee the military safety of those oil-rich nations. The oil-rich nations would agree to spend and invest their U.S. paper dollars inside the United States, particularly in U.S. Treasury bonds, which would be redeemable through future generations of U.S. taxpayers. The concept was labeled the petrodollar. In effect, the United States, no longer able to back the dollar with gold, was now backing it with oil, other people's oil. And that necessity to keep control over those oil nations to prop up the dollar has dominated America's foreign policy in the region ever since. But as America's manufacturing and agriculture has declined, the oil-producing nations faced a dilemma. Like France, they've got piles and piles of these paper notes and treasury bonds piling up in their vaults, and there really wasn't all that much except real estate they wanted to buy from the United States of America. Europe's cars and aircraft were superior and less costly. In more recent times, America's experiment with GMO food crops has led a lot of nations to simply avoid buying U.S. agricultural exports. Israel's constant belligerence against its neighbors has caused the oil...
Let me stop this for a quick second, and we'll get back into it. We only got, you know, maybe 10 more minutes left of this. But, yeah, it's... the thing I like is... the fact that we're going to see where most of these states now are legalizing marijuana for medical use because they want money, too. So, you know, the federal, oh God, I could talk all night about this. But it's just going to show you, you know, our money is becoming no good to these people because they know it's bullshit. You know, that's what we're seeing. People around the world are catching on to the scam. So, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say that's exactly right. That's why the BRICS have formed and are trading in their own currencies.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they don't like that. They don't like that at all. And they're going to start something about it. That's how they do it every time. You know, take a little bit of that power. That's anything. You mess with their money, you piss them off. That's the way it goes. I mean, in every level, to the big corporate government down to the little governments. Same thing. Same scenario. It's
so
what they
is that
do.
The reason why the dollar is collapsing here?
Well, yeah, like I said before, there's too many cups of that water. Too many cups of water ain't no flavor to it no more. You know, people have caught on. I think other countries actually caught on. We just don't hear about it from them. I don't see why not. You know, alternative media. But
right.
I noticed a lot of times things will be getting blocked on YouTube here lately, and you know, what's
and
up?
Because they don't want the people to know. Did you know
where?
Today they announced that the 401ks, anyone that has been involved in their 401k, I think for 10 or 15 years, that their 401k has increased, that it has went up. It's a high, I think a 9 or 10%, something like that. But now a person who's had their 401k for 10 or 15 years, it should be worth over $200,000. But they also talked about how because of this announcement, you know, all the countries are scared that the United States is going to attack Syria, that the stock markets and everything is, you know, going down because people are scared of that.
Well, they should.
So how does one go up and the other go down?
Okay. But you see how the man explained how, you know, things work better in countries of how good Russia's doing now and, you know, not using the U.S. dollar. You know,
mm-hmm.
Germany did it. They did good economically, but Hitler flipped out me. Of course, they came up with, you know. So when you hear that, you know, when Germany's doing good, you know, and you hear about the killing of all the Jews and everything, and that was the reason why we supposedly went to war with them. But
mm-hmm.
there again, you know, was that just a catalyst to, you know, come up with? You know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, like with Syria. Saying
mm-hmm.
that Syria. And who else said that they used that against, too? Because they used that on a couple of years ago or with the last war or something like that
right.
It was because they were doing crimes against their own people.
Right, right. But
so that seems to be a catch-on phrase, doesn't it?
Well, you ever think about it, too, that Syria, they're saying Syria's claiming it didn't have nothing to do with that chemical attack.
Right.
Well, it could have been somebody else.
Yeah, and that's what I would thought about also, that, you know, I mean, yes, it happened, but who's to say that Syria directly did it? That
and then
the bombing, the best
excuse I like to heard was that they couldn't get no evidence because of, you know, the bombing, you know, it was all been removed or whatever, blah, 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 blah. So why would you throw an excuse in there if you had a chemical that's untraceable? Why would you even say anything like that? You're trying to cover something up, you know?
But this is the reason why the U.S. and I think Britain
mm-hmm.
and who else that, you know, they're all ready to go on it. But, of course, you know, here we're waiting for the word, which we're supposed to get one day this week.
Right. But the bankers should be saying, hey, look here. If you don't do this for me, this is what I'm going to do to you. See, that's the way it works. Is that correct? If you don't do this for me,
yes,
I'm just going to do this to you. That fraud thing, you know, greed brings it on. Fraud and corruption and blah, 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 blah. Which we all know that. Everybody knows that. But how far does it go? It goes pretty damn far, I think. Real far. Real far out. You know,
so
but
who's benefiting from this?
They are.
the bankers are. But what is it sure. that they, I mean, I know you and Sister Egonia explain this. They have
Pardon
all
me?
The money to begin with. They've already made us slaves because of the 14th Amendment. What mm-hmm. more do they want from the people?
Are you, do you want my response?
Yes, please.
Okay. For me, it has become easier to understand this, to look outside of America and
mm-hmm.
see the bigger picture. Because if, like, that's why I love All Wars, the Bankers' Wars, because he's given us the historical understanding. And you see, you say, who benefits? Well, first of all defense manufacturers benefit. Halliburton, Blackwater, all the people that make bombs and drones and, you know, I heard somebody yesterday say one missile, I forget the name of it, F-35 or something, I don't know, that probably ain't right. But anyway, one of these missiles that they got over there in the Middle East now costs $1 million each, and the missile carrier costs $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So who benefits? Hey,
you betcha.
See, remember, we're just useless eaters to them. We're just ants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So every time they get into trouble with their monetary system, which is worldwide today, they start a war. That's what this All Bankers, All Wars of Bankers Wars is explaining to us, how it all, the First World War, what it was about, the Second World War
mm-hmm.
was about finance.
Mm-hmm.
It's always
mm-hmm.
about the bankers.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So that's the only way I know how to answer it. But
right,
to me,
like
it helps when you look outside and don't just look in America.
Right, exactly.
That's why
like
I put
said
that.
Before, when Paul Revere said that, you know, the British are coming, you know, but then the British left, they didn't win the war, okay? They went back and thought it through. We know another way to get them, money.
Well,
money.
Ron, with all due respect, Ron, I beg to differ with you on that. The British
okay,
didn't lose
fine.
The war. This is still a British colony, always has been. Because
right.
and so they pretended like they lost the war, but they still control everything.
Exactly what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Antoinette, you were trying.
No, that's okay. I just wanted Ron to know that N2K is in queue.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to get off, but I put a link in there of the a link for the global debt clocks.
Mm-hmm.
The
okay.
show all
Thank
the,
you.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I pulled it up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I
remember
that, yes. Okay.
It's in the chat room.
Okay. I'll bring it up here in a second. All right. Well, I'll bring in to KM for a minute. Then we're going to get back to the finish this clip up.
Okay. And
What's
hello,
up,
all back.
What's happening, man?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello,
2K.
What's up,
man? I'll wait for the clip to be played. I want to hear this. I want to hear this thing out and make sure that I have the proper information. So I don't want to interrupt the clip. But I would like to say this before I get put on mute. For all, everybody that's listening, I love Ron Reck. I love Antoinette. She's my sister from another mother. And Ron Reck is my brother from another mother. And Perry Steele, I love you too. Michael Hood, all of y'all that's out there, I love all of y'all. But guess what? When you hear this clip, I'm going
to
come back with some real science.
Bring it on.
Okay, great.
All right, well, let's do this. I'm going to mute her back out, and we're going to get back to the clip, so hang tight with me.
In exchange for only selling their oil for dollars, the United States would guarantee the military safety of those oil-rich nations. The oil-rich nations would agree to spend and invest their U.S. paper dollars inside the United States, particularly in U.S. Treasury bonds, which would be redeemable through future generations of U.S. taxpayers. The concept was labeled the petrodollar. In effect, the United States no longer able to back the dollar with gold, was now backing it with oil, other people's oil. And that necessity to keep control over those oil nations to prop up the dollar has dominated America's foreign policy in the region ever since. But as America's manufacturing and agriculture has declined, the oil-producing nations face a dilemma. Like France, they've got piles and piles of these paper notes and treasury bonds piling up in their vault, and there really wasn't all that much except real estate they wanted to buy from the United States of America. Europe's cars and aircraft were superior and less costly. In more recent times, America's experiment with GMO food crops has led a lot of nations to simply avoid buying U.S. agricultural exports. Israel's constant belligerence against its neighbors has caused the oil-producing nations to wonder if the U.S. could actually keep their end of the petrodollar arrangement. So oil-producing nations started to talk of selling their oil for whatever currency the purchasers wanted to pay. Iraq, already somewhat hostile to the United States following Desert Storm, demanded the right to sell their oil for euros in 2000. In 2002, the United Nations agreed that Iraq had a right to sell their oil for euros under the Oil for Food program. 1 year later, 2003, the United States reinvaded Iraq, lynched Saddam Hussein, and placed Iraq's oil back on the world market, only available for U.S. dollars. Now, the clear U.S. policy shift following 9/11, away from at least attempting to appear to be an impartial broker of peace in the Mideast, to one of unquestioned support for Israel's aggressions, only further eroded confidence in the petrodollar deal, and even more oil-producing nations started openly talking of trading their oil for other global currencies. So over in Libya, Muammar Gaddafi had instituted a state central bank and a value-based trade currency, the gold dinar. Gaddafi then announced that Libya's oil was for sale, but only for the gold dinar. Other African nations, seeing the rise of the gold dinar and the euro, even as the U.S. dollar continued its inflation-driven decline, flocked to the new Libyan currency for trade. This move had the potential to seriously undermine the global hegemony of the dollar. French President Nicolas Sarkozy reportedly went so far as to call Libya a threat to the financial security of the world. So the United States invaded Libya under the guise of supporting a popular rebellion. They brutally murdered Gaddafi, apparently because the object lesson of Saddam's lynching had not been enough of a message, imposed a private central bank, and returned Libya's oil output to dollars only. The gold that was supposed to be made into the gold dinars, as of the last report I could find, unaccounted for. Now, according to General Wesley Clark, the master plan for the dollarification of the world's oil nations included seven targets: Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. Venezuela, which has started selling their oil to China for the yuan, seems to be a late addition. What is notable about those original seven nations targeted by the U.S. is that none of them are members of the Bank of International Settlements. This is the private central banker's private central bank located in Switzerland. That meant that those seven targeted nations were deciding for themselves how to run their nation's economies rather than submitting to the international private central bankers. Now, of course, the bankers' gun sights are on Iran, which dares to have a government central bank and sell their oil for whatever currency they choose. The war agenda for Iran is, as always, to force Iran's oil to be sold only for dollars and to force them to accept a privately owned central bank. Now, you have been raised by a public school system and a media that constantly assures you that the reasons for all these wars and assassinations are many and varied. We're bringing democracy to the conquered lands. We hear that a lot. When actually, the U.S. hasn't. The usual result of a U.S. overthrow is the imposition of a pro-business, pro-Wall Street, pro-U.S. dictatorship. Good example, the 1953 CIA overthrow of Iran's democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh and the imposition of the Shah. Or the 1973 CIA overthrow of Chile's elected government of President Salvador Allende and the imposition of the dictator Augusto Pinochet. Another one of the excuses we'll get is, we have to save the people from a cruel oppressor. That's the one they're using in Syria right now. Revenge for 9/11. That was a big one going into Iraq. And then later on, President Bush was caught on video saying, no, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. And behind all of them, that tired, worn-out, catch-all excuse for invasion, weapons of mass destruction. Assassinations are always passed off as crazed lone nuts to obscure the real agenda. And the real agenda of the bankers is very simple. It is enslavement of the people by creation of a false sense of obligation. Now, that obligation is false because the private central banking system, by design, creates more debt than money with which to pay the debt. There is no way out the way it's set up. It's impossible to escape as long as you're playing by their rules. And you need to understand, private central banking is not science. It is a religion. It's a set of arbitrary rules created to benefit the priesthood, meaning the bankers, and it's supported only because people believe this is the way it's supposed to be. It is a religion. It's a set of arbitrary rules created to benefit the priesthood, meaning the owners of the private central banks. The fraud persists with often lethal results only because the people are brainwashed into believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, and no alternative exists or should even be dreamt of. Now, this same approach, the same brainwashing, was true of two earlier systems of enslavement, rule by divine right and slavery, both systems built to trick people into obedience, and both now recognized by modern civilization as illegitimate. So now we are on the verge of a new era in history where we will recognize rule by debt, rule by private central bankers, issuing the public currency as a loan and interest is equally illegitimate. It only works as long as people allow themselves to believe that this is the way life is supposed to be. But you need to understand something that's the core of the issue. Private central banks do not exist to serve the people, the community, or the nation. Private central banks exist to serve their owners, to make them rich beyond the dreams of Midas, and all for the cost of ink, paper, and the right bribe to the right official, and the occasional assassination. But behind all these wars and all these assassinations, the 100 million-plus horrible deaths from all of these wars, lies a single policy of financial dictatorship. The private central bankers only allow rulers to rule, only on the promise that the people of a nation be enslaved to the private central banks. Rulers who do not go along with that will be killed, their nation invaded by those other nations still enslaved to the private central banks. The bankers themselves don't fight these wars. Their children are not in these wars. A nation tries to break free of the private central bankers like Libya. All the other nations under the bankers' control pile on and destroy them. This so-called clash of civilizations you are being told about by the corporate media, it's really a war between banking systems, with the private central bankers forcing themselves onto the rest of the world, no matter how many millions must die for it. The constant hate-mongering against Muslims you see in the corporate media lies in a simple fact. Like the ancient Christians prior to the Knights Templars, Muslims forbid usury or the lending of money at interest because they saw in ancient times, like Rome, how these banking practices could destroy an entire society. And that is the reason our government media insists that Muslims have to be hated and killed and converted. They refuse to submit to currencies loaned at interest. They refuse to be debt slaves. That makes them a threat to the natural order of the world, the new world order of global fascist dictatorship. So, off to war your children must go to spill their blood for the money junkies' gold. We barely survived the last two world wars. Now we're going into the third one in the nuclear bioweapon age. That is very dangerous. We have to ask ourselves, are the private central bankers willing to risk incinerating the whole planet to feed their greed? Apparently so. You as parents, as siblings, as spouses, need to ask yourself, do you really want to see your loved ones in uniform, killed and crippled, all for a bank balance sheet? But the whole point of this article, the whole point of what I'm sharing with you today, this is all history, you can go out and hunt it down for yourself. Behind all the flag waving, behind all the propaganda, behind the crazed lone nut assassins, weapons of mass destruction, all of the modern wars this nation have fought are wars by and for the private bankers, fought and bled for by third parties unaware of the true reason they're expected to gracefully accept being killed and crippled for. And the process is quite simple. We've explained it before on this show. As soon as the private central bank issues its currency as a loan at interest, the public is forced deeper and deeper into debt. When the people are reluctant to borrow anymore, that's when the Keynesian economists demand the government borrow more to keep the pyramid scheme working. When both the people and the government refuse to borrow anymore, that is when the large wars get started, to plunge everyone even deeper to debt to pay for the war, and then after the war to borrow even more to rebuild. And when these horrible wars are over, the ordinary people have basically what they had before the war, except their graveyards are a lot larger, and everyone is in debt to the private bankers for the next century. That is why Brown Brothers Harriman in New York was funding the rise of Adolf Hitler, because war is the banker's richest harvest. We all need to recognize this is what all these wars have been about. Private central banking, enlarging their domain, imposing their will on nations that do not want it, imposing their system on the rulers of nations who do not want it. Bribery, blackmail, assassination, they will do anything to maintain their stranglehold on the productivity of the world's people. And as long as private central banks are allowed to exist, inevitably, as the night follows the day, there will be poverty, hopelessness, millions of deaths in endless world wars until the earth itself is sacrificed in flames to mammon. The path to true world peace lies in the abolishment of all private central banking everywhere and a return to the state-issued value-based currencies that allow nations and people to become prosperous through their own labor and development and efforts. Now, I mentioned the Knights Templars. Prior to the Knights Templars, Christianity, like Islam, forbade usury because Christianity, much of Orthodox Christianity, came out of Rome, and they had seen firsthand what debt-based economies do, even to the Roman Empire. They'd seen it firsthand. So they had a ban on usury. And the Knights Templars were able to basically either bribe or blackmail the Pope to get a special dispensation that allowed them to rent money, is what they called it. They didn't call it usury, they called it renting money. A lot of modern predatory banking practices were pioneered by the Knights Templars. And they plunged Europe into hopelessly unpayable debt until finally French King Philip IV, otherwise known as Philip the Fair, did the only solution he could do. Because he understood, as long as you believed in the rules of the bankers, as long as you played by the rules they created to serve themselves, you are hopelessly trapped. And so Philip thought outside the box, and I know he's demonized for it, but in looking at the history of the Templars, it was his last resort. He sent messages to all of the regions in France, secret orders on the same time, in the same moment, on the same day, all of the Templars were arrested. And their commanderies, which is what they called their banks, were broken into looking for looted wealth. They didn't find a lot of it. It was a paper empire, just like the Federal Reserve is. It's all based on paper. There's nothing of any real value there. It's all paper notes. And he sent the Templars to prison and execution, except for Scotland and Portugal, where the Pope and King Philip IV really didn't have a lot of control. I think that the governments of the world, looking at the situation, looking how close we are to seeing this current world conflict emerge into a full-blown global thermonuclear war, that maybe they need to start thinking about the wisdom of King Philip the Fair and say it's time to simply grab all these private central bankers all at the same time so they can't simply skedaddle from one nation to another and come back and try the same thing again, as they will inevitably do, because these people are addicts. They're hopelessly addicted to other people's money. That's why we call them money junkies. When we see somebody who's addicted to cocaine or methamphetamine or heroin, and we can easily see how they're destroying their home and community around them. Now we need to look at these money addicts and look at how they're destroying the entire world around them. And it's time for an intervention. It's time for us to become private central banking heretics, to stop believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, because it isn't. It isn't even the way the United States was actually started, and they're trying this hard. Look at the destruction of our nation. We used to be the world's greatest nation. Now the most generous estimate is we're down to number 16 and still falling. And yet, despite the destruction to our nation, its infrastructure, its children, its quality of medical care, quality of its manufacturing output, we still are compelled somehow to go out and force this same banking system onto the rest of the world at the point of a bayonet. Does that make any sense at all? Not to a rational human being. To a money junkie, yeah, it's perfect. But we're really at a crisis point in history. And the first step to resolving that crisis, to not let it go any further into a potential nuclear war, is to recognize that private central banking, ruled by manufactured illusion of debt, is no more legitimate a system of governance than rule by divine right or rule by slavery. We all need to recognize the true cause of all the pain and suffering and wars. It's not the terrorists. It's not Al-Qaeda. These are just distractions and set pieces put in front of your eyes so you can't see the very clear pattern behind much of modern human history. It's a war of banking systems with the predatory private central banks seeking to eradicate any nation and any ruler that would dare try and operate their economy outside the control of the private central bankers. That's the real cause for the war. Is it something you're willing to fight and die for, to support these private central bankers? Is it something you're willing to let your sons and daughters and brothers and sisters be blown to bloody bits for, so the money junkies can have their latest fix, just a little tiny bit more gold or a little larger number on the bottom of that brokerage statement, so they can have today's thrill, their fix of money that is bought with the blood of your children? I don't think so. But the time has come to point out what really is the cause of all causes behind all the wars and suffering that our planet is having to endure and our people are having to endure. The common enemy of all humankind are private central banks issuing the public currency as a loan at interest. And as history will show, they will do anything, up to and including global wars, to keep their lock on yours and your children's future economic well-being and productivity. We're not a free society. Media will tell us that we're free, but we're not free. We are slaves. Our slave chains are made of paper, and that paper is the Federal Reserve note. Too few of our leaders have tried to stand up to this system of enslavement, usually with lethal results. But if all the people of the world at the same time stand up and say no more private central banks, it will come crashing down, just as slavery did, just as rule by divine right did. And then we'll be embarking on a new era in human history where the emphasis on social development is on the people and not on the money junkies.
Okay, sorry about that little delay. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Yeah, man, wow. Yeah, that's all. Please, it's all in a nutshell. All in a nutshell, man. That is, wow. That is the. That's what I've been saying for so long.
Oh, shoot.
You're back on, Antoinette.
I noticed.
Yeah, you're back on. But yeah, wow, there we go. Ain't that crazy? But that's what it
yes,
is. That's
it
what,
is,
I,
yeah.
That's what I've been saying it forever. You know, I mean, no doubt about
it. When he said about the oil, so that
mm-hmm.
ties in with the wars over in that area,
yeah.
Palestine and all of them. So that's what
yeah.
it all boils down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's
about
what
forcing them to still take the U.S. currency.
Right. That really makes you think about 9/11, don't it? See?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Right. So there you go. Well, anyway, I'm going to open up all the phone lines. We're going to get into this show. All right. Y'all ready? Here we
yeah.
go. All right. Here we go, folks. All the phone lines are open. Hello, everybody. How's it going? I hope you enjoyed the clip. Hope you learned something.
Hello, everyone.
That.
And Sister Agonia had put the link in for y'all. It's All Wars or Bankers Wars. And she put the link in. If you look up, you'll be able to see it.
Yep. Absolutely. You need to watch that whole thing. If you missed the beginning of this clip, sorry about that. But you know, if you got in here kind of late. But yeah, check that out. You know, check the archives out of the show. And you'll get it too, you know, either way. Yeah. You know, it just man, how much more do you need to be explained? I got another clip I'll probably try to pull off tomorrow night. You all like get here on time at 8 o'clock my time, Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock on the East
Coast. 9 o'clock for us East Coast. Now I think mainly everyone is on the East Coast, seeing you keep one of the one out there your time.
Well, you're all trying to force me to move to the East Coast in Region 3. What's up with that?
Can I ask?
See, we may have to run to you. We're coming out.
Can
good.
I ask a question? Can I ask
yes,
a question?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Antoinette.
Absolutely.
How many people know about, he said something that was very poignant.
Mm-hmm.
How many people know about the Templars?
Not many. Not many.
Okay. That was the first banking institution.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do your research on the Templars, like he was talking about usury, and usury, for those of you who don't understand, that means interest.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what usury means, interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Based on the economical system that we have in place, and I love the clip, Ron. It was right on point. Most people, even though they heard it and will listen to it again, will not understand it because they don't understand history. And you can't understand what's going on in the world today if you don't understand history.
Well, right, but my point of doing this is to give them the interest and the information so they can go do research and try to and look at it. You know what I mean? That's the whole point. That's all, I'm trying
won't
to
educate happen, Ron. It won't happen, because you know what? What's more interesting to people who want to find out about history is what's going on with the show called Scandal. That's way more interesting. A black woman sleeping with a white president and committing adultery, and the population of the viewers who are most interested in the show are black women, even though at the same time, here's the dichotomy, they're the least desirable females to be married. However, they are the ones that watch Scandal the most. Now,
well, and TK, that's the reason why we're doing these shows.
People might not even see the connection between the two, but there is a connection. There's a connection. Because what he was saying is that when you don't understand how the money's being played and you don't understand how society is fabricated, you will never understand how you're being manipulated. You will never get it. You won't get it.
Well,
so
I understand
here's what we'll do. We'll create a TV show where a black woman sleeps with a president who's white, who's fornicating on his wife, and at the same time, black women will justify, oh, she's in control, she's powerful, she's doing all this other kind of stuff. But what they don't understand is how it ties in to what he's saying, which is the bankers, the money, how the whole program works.
Right. But look, man, let me explain this to you, man. But the whole idea of what we're trying to do with this clips and what we're trying to do is try to, whatever people are listening and people listen to archives, maybe get a hint of this, you know what I mean? Give them some type of explanation to what's going on. That's the whole point, you know? And do the research. That's the whole thing, man. I'm trying to help educate people a little bit. If I get to one person that catches on to that, I did good. That's why I said, man. You know, it's I know everybody.
You're doing that. And I don't mean to discredit that in any way. But here's the thing that the people who are listening to the show and the general public need to understand is that when you listen to that clip, did you hear him talk about going back in history, the banking industry, and how it works and how it manipulates?
That's where you got to start.
Not only the money, but how it manipulates what you think sociologically, what you think in your community, what you think religiously. I'm not talking to you, or I'm not talking to Antoinette. I'm talking to the audience. Did you get that part of it? How the money can dictate how you act day in and day out.
Exactly. The quest for fire, money, you believe in. That's what it is. The big shit you're chasing, the promise. You know, which can end at 1 minute. You can have a bunch of it and all that worth shit. In a second.
And here's what he said, Ron. In spite of saying all that, here's what he said. The money is fake. It's not even real.
No, they got anything to back it. Even the promise of it.
It's not even... the money is not even real. So, with that being said, all the things that we just talked about, which people align themselves with, is the shit real or is it fake?
Right. But it's fake.
Right, it is. Ron?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me. Alfax was trying to say something. I don't think anybody really heard him.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear him. Go ahead, Alfax. What's up, man? I unmuted everybody. All the phone lines are open, guys. Okay.
I'm going to run that nigga off the show. I'm going to tell you right
now. No, please don't do that.
We ain't doing that shit tonight. I ain't playing that, man. We're not going to be arguing and fighting. All right.
I'll be respectful.
I'm just trying to get my nerves calmed down after my past week I went through, shit.
Well, Ron, how you doing, Ron? How you doing, Antoinette? And I must say, how you doing, N2K? Also, N2K, you tried to run me off my own show, but it never happened, and I don't think you'll never run me off any show. But let's stay with the topic.
Okay, gentlemen.
Let's
stay with the topic, okay?
Let's say, right, exactly, though.
Right.
How you guys doing today?
Doing great.
We're well. Alfax, what do you think of the clip? This is on Bankers. All wars are Bankers' wars.
Well, I didn't read the clip. I know you guys are talking. I didn't hear the clip. I just got off my show.
Did you see the link that Sister Magonia had put in? She put in the...
No.
Okay. She had put in the link.
Can you update me? I'll be quiet. Can you update me, guys? Bring me abreast of what you're talking about.
It's a lot. But what I'm going to do is try to...
Well, you can summarize it for me, Candy. You can summarize it.
Well, we're talking about how the banks control wars, how they're the cause of all the wars we go into. The control of the currency. You know how countries don't want to use the U.S. dollar no more. We go over and kick their ass and force them to take it. You know, that's how Kennedy got assassinated, because he wanted to do something different. Hitler had his own banking system. But the central banks got pissed off, so we went to war with them to make them take the fucking dollar again. So everything, every country we went to, that you see the you get these reasons, like the Jewish Holocaust, the 9/11, now this shit in Syria, people getting gassed. But when it comes down to it, the information you're never given is the fact that the banks have a problem with them fuckers not taking their money. Because it's always a country that's fighting not to use the U.S. dollar. Which it went from the gold standard to the fiat currency to a petrodollar to back it. Because Nixon couldn't back it. They were calling him for the money. They couldn't get the shit. So Nixon pulled it, stopped the trade on that, and it turned it into the petrodollar. So oil backed it. So it was everybody else's money. We was backing our currency on other people's oil, other people's shit. So that's how it works, They have to have something to back it. Now there ain't nothing there to back it no more. But that's where our problem is going to Syria.
Excuse me, Alfax, and anyone else that missed it, I put the link back in again for you. The clip that was played is All Wars Are Bankers' Wars, and I really suggest that everyone really go back in and listen to it again. Maybe something that you want to listen to a couple of times and, really take notes and do research on to get additional information on it.
Right. It'll give you a better understanding of what we're actually looking at now, what's coming in the future, because the history
and why
what's going on.
We're in the wars and why we're going into this one with Syria. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think it's helpful for those who are – can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
For those who may be new to the subject, when we talk about whether the money is real or not and our money, that's confusing because the truth is when the United States went into sovereign default in 1933, which we know as bankruptcy, the United States has not had its own currency. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation, and there is a document called Modern Money Mechanics, published by the Chicago Federal Reserve, and in that document it explains that Federal Reserve notes is not money.
Mm-hmm.
It says it right in there. Okay?
Real talk.
Yeah, it's right in there. So therefore, when we understand that what we have in this country is a system of credit and debt, because mm-hmm. money is, that's the reason why all of these people you see that are being foreclosed on, a lot of people are under the misconception that, oh, they weren't paying their mortgage, oh, they lost their job. Ah, there were people that paid cash for their homes and had two mortgage companies trying to foreclose on them because it's uh-huh. about those real estate investors, okay, and because they sold their mortgages like 100 times around the world. So
yeah.
nobody don't know who owns anything here now.
Derivatives.
And I don't want to get, I'm sorry.
Derivatives.
Real talk. No, no.
No,
go
please
deep.
Continue.
Go deep.
There,
go deep.
Okay.
Go deep.
So let me just, you know, just kind of, I have a tendency to get off on a tangent, and I want to stay, you know.
Sister Sonia, you're fine. Please continue.
No, no, but I'm just saying, I don't want to be confusing here. I want to add something constructive to it. So what I really wanted to kind of stay, I didn't want to get too far afield from the topic of the clip, okay?
Yeah.
But I just wanted to clarify about the fact that that's one of the things, you know, there's histories of nations or countries that, which really there aren't no such thing, they're all corporations anyway, we're on farms. We think we are in countries, but we're really on farms. And there's another good clip that you could look at. It's called The Story of Your Slavery. And it's 13 minutes. It'll blow your head off, okay? The story, I'll put the link up there when I get done talking. But see, okay, here's what's going on. There was 188 nations worldwide. 15 countries are gone. They no longer exist. And what they do is they go and attack these nations' currencies. And 10 of these nations are in Africa. 25 other nations are on the chopping block right now due to the financial policy, and they are to be replaced by the global government. They keep talking about the New World Order and one world government or global government. And what that is a monetary system that has been run by the British, and I don't mean the people of Britain. I'm talking about a system of government or whatever you want to call it, mafia, you know what I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
it's a monetary system that has been imposed on the world. Like, for instance, the first thing they did to Haiti after they earthquaked Haiti was put in a central bank.
Yep.
Yep.
Sure did.
That's what they always do.
So it's the British, so we, you know, they throw around the words, we think U.S., oh, we're empire. Uh-uh. There's only one empire on this planet, and that's the British Empire. And they handed the baton to little brother,
yeah.
because what the United States is the military arm of this monetary system. There's the Vatican.
Exactly.
There's
exactly.
the City of London, and there's
exactly.
U.S. and the District of Columbia. Those are three city states
okay.
in the world that run the world.
Real talk.
Mm-hmm.
Real talk. Real
Absolutely.
Talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
So
Absolutely.
I just wanted to interject that. I don't want...
And I just wanted to get your take on this, my sister, being
mm-hmm.
that you chimed in and you're probably somebody that I've heard for the first time. You might have been on these shows before.
No,
but
sir.
One of the things that I've always interjected is that when you talk about the banking institution, and I prefaced my remarks earlier when we were listening to the clip, and he was talking about the Knights Templars.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and read that, that mm-hmm. was when the banking institution, as we know it today, was first put into place, and is exactly tied to Christianity, Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
Islam.
Mm-hmm. But now, can I share something with you? Can I share something with you?
Sure.
It goes back before that. In 1348, there was the banking system collapse called the House of Bardi. You can look that up on Wikipedia. And you remember after 1348, that's when they had the Black Plague. Okay?
Right.
Okay, so
right.
that goes back to 1348. But it even goes back before that because, like I said, this system comes from Babylon. This system
but
goes
what
all
I'm
the way back
about,
to Babylon.
When I mentioned the Templars,
it's come
that
back
goes back to the year 10,000. That goes back to the not the first century, Mm-hmm. But I think like the 11th century,
mm-hmm.
when I was talking about the Templars.
I understand, and I'm not an expert on the Knights Templar. I know a little bit about Adam Weishaupt and all that, the Bavarians, and how they during the Inquisition,
oh,
you know,
way
they killed
before them. That. He was 1776. I'm
okay, but see, that's what I'm telling you. I don't know the history. All I want to show was. Not to challenge what you're saying. I'm sure you know what you're talking about. I'm being honest.
Well,
I don't know that.
DC.
I don't know that much about that particular issue. But I know that this monetary system goes back to, like the guy Mike Rivera in the clip said, it goes back to the concept of the right to rule of priesthood. The divine right to rule. Okay, so I'm just saying that goes all the way back to Babylon and probably before.
It goes back to your Bible, because in your Bible it tells you that Jesus Christ, when he went to the temple, he turned over the money changers.
Right, and there's another.
Remember that?
Yes, I do. That's why I said Babylon. That's why I said Babylon.
There you go.
And there's another good document for anybody who's interested to help understand this. It's called the Dispatch of the Law Merchants. See, because back in England, when the kings, they had their ports, but the law merchants had their own system, and those were what we thought of as the pirates or out on the ships that were trading around the world. They had their own law. Okay, and then they would maritime law, and they would get attacked, and so they would have to come into
the. Everything on the sea belongs to you. That means that everything belongs to the sea belongs to you. That's what maritime law means.
Mm-hmm. And they would come into the land, the ports where the kings and everything were in charge, but the kings didn't have. They found that it was to their advantage. They let the law merchants come in to do their trading on their land, and they eventually hooked up with them because they were being attacked. And so the law merchants were more organized and had more protection for them being on the high seas. So that's when the priest hooked up with the law merchants, and that's why we have what we have today, the British accredited registry, the bar, with all these attorneys that are turning us over to the, you know, to the banksters.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You see?
Can I give you my email address, sweetheart? Because we need to exchange some information.
Yeah, and somebody said they want to ask a question, so I'll be glad to take your email address, but I want to be quiet.
I want to ask
Sister Gonya, I'll forward it to you.
Okay, thank you, Antoinette.
Yes,
thank you.
I want to talk, right now you're talking a lot of good curriculum, and I don't know if factual or not, but let's talk about the curriculum that they teach our kids about money.
There is no money, brother. There's no money.
All facts.
Hold on for a minute.
All facts. Please don't disrespect. Let her explain to you what she's saying. She's telling you there isn't any money.
Hold on. How did I disrespect her when I was
don't
saying
cut across
something
her,
and she cut
please.
Me off?
Don't cut across her.
I apologize if I cut you off, brother. I don't mean any problem.
Ma'am. Antoinette and Ron saying I cut you off, but you're just admitting
and
that
I just
you
apologize
cut me off.
If I did.
I know, ma'am. I know you is, but I'm wondering why Ron and Antoinette said I cut you off when you're admitting. I know you're apologizing, ma'am, but listen. You know what? I'm going to hang up, man.
No. Don't hang up. I want to hear what you have to say. Please. You know, it's all good. It's just a mistake. Go ahead and say what you want to say. But there is no money. Go ahead.
He can't. He's gone. I kicked him. He's going to start arguing with you. He's going to start arguing with you. I'm not going to allow that to happen. I don't know if he disrespects
okay.
what you're talking. I will kick you. I don't care if anybody else listens but me, her, and Antoinette. Listen to this lady talk. Have some respect for her. You know, I talked to this lady earlier. Very, very good person to listen to, and I'm trying to help you folks catch on to this shit that's happening to you in your life. That's what I'm trying to do. So
and I'm sorry that this. Oh, I'm sorry, Ron.
No. You have no reason to say you're sorry for whatsoever. You're definitely you whatever you want to say, sweetheart. You help yourself. Anybody gives you a hassle on my show, I will kick them. I want to hear you talk.
I'm really sorry that he hung up because you know we're all struggling. I'm sorry. We're all struggling out here to try to understand this. It's a big thing, you know, a big subject. And I didn't mean to you know, cut him off his question. But there is no money. We've been conditioned to believe in fairy tales and myths. You know, the only I think your audience already knows that. And, you know, so I'm being redundant, and I don't mean to be redundant, but
I don't think so. Not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them know. They just don't know. That's the whole idea of this. I mean, you know, all facts is a good guy. I have nothing against the man, but he's always argumentative. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna let him sit there and challenge you because I know exactly what you're saying. I know. I got you. You know what I mean? I
mm-hmm.
want the same page with you. The same
mm-hmm.
page, same piece of paper, the same ink where it was written on us. I'm with
mm-hmm.
you. I mean, we had a conversation on the phone. I'm like, oh my mm-hmm. God, somebody just blessed me. Just
oh, well, thank you.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I'm learning. I don't know everything. I studied
right.
for a while, and I know that right now, as far as how do you say his name, the one that hung up?
All facts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 70% of our currency is digital.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we know that the definition of money is when you buy something, then it belongs to you. But now we have to ask ourselves a question. How is it that when you buy a house or a car, you got to pay taxes to the tax assessor or the county and so forth, so you don't own anything? Slaves can't own property.
Right.
Yes, see? And so that's why I made the statement, we do not have money because we can't purchase anything. And the reason I put the link in there about the debt clocks and the nations is because if you look at the U.S. debt clock, it'll blow your mind. Because because they filed bankruptcy in 1933, when you file bankruptcy, you go under bankruptcy reorganization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So
when you go into bankruptcy, they appoint trustees. Well, guess who the trustees of the bankruptcy of the United States is?
Britain.
United Nations.
Britain.
No,
right.
United Nations. And remember when Hillary went to the United Nations to file a complaint against the governor of Arizona? Do y'all remember that?
Yes.
Yes.
I do.
Now,
yes.
Let's ask ourselves a question. Why did she go to the United Nations?
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the fact that during the Roosevelt administration,
mm-hmm.
now, since you've referenced the United States filing bankruptcy in
mm-hmm.
1933,
mm-hmm.
the Federal Reserve Act was in 1913.
That's correct.
In Jekyll Island, here in Georgia, where I'm at. So, and then after 1933, where the United States filed bankruptcy, they came up with not one but two acts, which was the Social Security Act and the Income Tax Act. So what we had was, in order to pay the debt on the loan, everybody was given a Social Security number, which is what the Social Security Act is. That means that we're collateral on a defaulted loan.
Right, because they
That's
had already...
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. No, you're right.
Because they didn't have anything else to use except our labor.
Exactly.
And in 19... you got to go back before 1913. You got to go back to 1871 because that's when the U.S. became a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
The Act
yes.
of 1871.
And the
exactly.
birth certificate is a collateral. The Social Security system is a bank account routing system.
The Social Security.
But let me finish my point, and I'm with you guys on everything that you're saying. Then when they came up with the income tax, and what a lot of people don't know is that when you pay income tax today, because the loan has been defaulted for so long, nothing that's paid in income tax goes to roads or anything socially. it only pays the interest on the defaulted loan
that you
talked about back in 1933.
That's right. 1933 was not the first bankruptcy. They've been bankrupt many times before 1933, but that's the most modern one.
Right. That was before we had the central bank.
Yes, and the IMF, our Social Security, is administrated by the Queen of England under the Privy Council, and she gets a salary for it.
I'm
and so our
this
Social
woman.
Security comes from the IMF.
I'm
and,
loving
as,
this.
As well
Can I
as
marry
the,
you? Can I marry you right now?
Oh, I already did that twice.
Right
I ain't
now.
Doing it
no
more.
I'm just playing. I'm just
I know,
playing.
I'm teasing.
But
yeah,
I love a woman. I love a person that does their homework. Man, this woman has done her homework. She knows what's happening.
Well, somebody else might
game.
Want to say something.
This is the game. And you know what, Ron? When you played that clip, you created, you grew this right now. What you're hearing right now is based on the clip that you played, and you planted this seed. And what people need to understand is that we're not all out here stupid. There's a lot of us who really know what the hell is going on.
Hey, N2K, can I tell you something, man? You think this is good? Wait till next week.
I want to, Ron, can I answer a question that's on the board from Pumpkin 13? She said, I thought the UN was formed in 1945, so how was the UN in charge of the bankruptcy of the U.S. in the 30s? You're absolutely on it, and that has been brought out in many forms where people have been studying law, and they hid it. That's how.
Yeah, but didn't the UN also change names?
No, that was the League of Nations, but that was before. But see, they hid this.
Yeah.
This has been a plan that's been put in place, and they couldn't put it right out there. Because it's been a long, drawn out, step by step plan. So, Pumpkin, that's right. You're absolutely correct.
And to answer your question, it was the League of Nations, and then it turned into Council on Foreign Relations, and then it changed into the UN.
The Council on Foreign Relations is still in existence, and they say that's the federal government.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And guess where the United Nations headquarters is?
On Rockefeller Day.
I already know.
Okay, all right.
I want to hear from somebody else. Where is the headquarters of the United Nations? Where's the headquarters? Ron?
I don't have a clue.
Antoinette, where's the headquarters for the United Nations?
I do not
know. New York City.
Really?
The Rockefeller donated that land to them, too.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you. And what's your name, sweetheart? I'm sorry.
My name is Ngoni Al.
Okay.
You just call me Ngoni.
What can I call you?
Ngoni. That's my first
Ngoni.
Name.
Ngoni.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to speak here. I work here, so I need to be a little quiet.
Where is the United Nations headquarters at?
You just told the people it's in New York City on land donated by the Rockefellers.
There you go.
Mhm. Mhm. But you know, the United Nations, we know, is just a front organization. It don't mean nothing. I've been praying for the day for 10 years. When everybody get up and walk out of there, then I'll know people don't walk up.
But that wasn't their original headquarters, was it?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yes, it was from day one.
I don't know. I got a question in my head about that. Because, I mean, you enlightened me. In fact, yeah, it's in New York. I remember that. I just couldn't get it off the top of my head. But I'm, there's something else about that. I'll have to look it up. But, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Excuse me. Ron, 3 minutes.
No, 1 minute, 31 seconds. So if y'all want to call in, we're going overtime if you want to. Hang out. But the only way you're going to hear the show is if you call in.
So you got to recall in now?
No, not you.
You're already on the line.
No, you're good.
Oh,
you're good.
Oh, okay.
You're already on.
So anyone that wants to call in, we have 1 minute and 40 seconds left. So you can either be a part of the conversation or to continue to listen to it. And that number is area code 718-508-9813. Again, that number is 718-508-9813. And we hope that you will call in and to join the conversation. But, of course, you're always welcome to listen, and the chat room is open for you.
Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. And I'm going to put the number in for y'all.
So let's talk about what's going on in Syria.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah, how does this tie in with the bankers?
You
know, to see where we exactly are, what is the war and stuff really all about, and how it goes back to all wars are bankers' wars.
Yep.
Do you remember, brother? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I was going to ask the brother if he remembered, did he hear about retired General Wesley Clark, who exposed that the plan for, well, the brother did the clip talked about it. In the clip he said that there was, what, how many was it, Ron? Seven or ten, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen. Mm-hmm. He named off a whole bunch of them,
right.
Iran, that they had planned 10 years ago to have war with.
Yeah.
So this is a plan. So to answer the question, what's going on in Syria, it's a plan that's going on. It's the plan.
Right. The game, like I said, when Obama got in office, he promised the first round. He promised change. And when he went in that Oval Office, they had him the fucking playbook and said, here's where you play by. Not what you said.
That's right.
But this is how you play the game.
That's right. Exactly. If you want to live.
Because if you see how that man went into shell shock when he acted after he got in that office, his demeanor was totally different than when he was campaigning for it.
But you know what, Ron? Do you remember when they had the photo op? Do you remember when they had the photo op when they had old man Bush, Junior Bush, Clinton?
I remember
and
that.
All,
I remember
you know
that.
What? And do you know what that was? Do you know what that was? That was a message to whoever it is they talked to.
I remember
to say,
that.
Don't worry, we still got everything under control.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. They speak in symbolisms all the time. And,
right. Just like a pitcher to a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is exactly right.
There's only one president. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
My whole point, a lot of times I tell shows I've done this show, is, you know, we don't want intelligent people, we want obedient people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. That's what I want. I'm sorry I'm not the guy, but hey, you know, what can they do? All they can do is kill me. And I really won't give a shit, and I still win. I ain't got to listen to bullshit no more. You know, so.
Yeah, these are serious times, but, you know, we've been here before. Humanity's been here before, obviously. So,
yes.
You know, and the beautiful thing about it is, for the first time in history that we know of, have we had access to the kind of information to enlighten ourselves, even though, you know, that's not enough. We have to do something, too. But at least, you know, that's given us a chance to do something different because we have access. I mean, think about 500 years ago when people couldn't even leave their village. They didn't have no idea what was going on.
Sister, I'm going to tell you right now what I believe. This is limited. I don't know how long this could be able to do this.
The internet?
This shit off. Yep. This network, this show, you know, everything.
Especially now you're talking about this stuff.
The internet. But here's the best part about it, which I give people some enlightenment on that fact. Is what I say is, here's the deal. They're too late. You didn't get educated with it.
Mm-hmm.
People get smarter with the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of bullshit on the internet. You know, if you believe in the bullshit ways, you just keep watching it. But
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are getting educated. They're learning faster, quicker,
mm-hmm.
better. And that's what I love about it, you know?
That's right. And you know what I like to do?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
When I hear
ahead.
About stuff like this, I like to leave a thought of solutions. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can talk about what's going on all we want to, but that's what are we going to do?
But that's
well,
what we
I think
solutions.
For all the young people out here, the first thing you need to do is stock up on canned goods and anything you can and leave all these iPads and all this other junk they got out here for you, that they and these Apple products where they people jumping out of buildings in China making them, slave labor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So instead of buying a new iPad, stock up on canned goods and toilet paper because you're going to need it.
Yep.
Yes.
Let me ask the sister a question. Her a question. How do you feel that the importance of AI, artificial intelligence, and the trans, I'm about to introduce something that most of our listeners either know about or either heard about, but might not even delve into, transhumanism, which is what we're embarking upon now, which is what you're talking about. Talk about that.
Well, my humble opinion is it's evil. I don't know whether this is something that's going to come to pass, whether this is one of their MK Ultra programs to keep you scared to death. I don't know whether it's, you know, I do know that they have hired the evilest man in the world that I know of. I wish I could think of his name right now. It'll pop in my head in a minute. That Google hired him now. The one that that was brought all this transhumanism thing in. I think it goes along with the ultra powers that be, who wants to be God and who wants to have a extended life and so forth and so on. But they, you know, we ain't gonna get none of that, right? That's only for them,
right?
And we
know underground cities and things that they have in place now.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could think of that man's name.
The oligarchies.
Yes.
Yes.
Brother, what's that man's name?
Talk about the singularity. Have you guys ever watched the movie Prometheus?
I haven't.
No.
You guys need to watch that.
I'll check it out. What is that guy's name? I know you know his name, the one of the... That talked about the singularity, the one that with this transhumanism. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name.
He's evil, man. He's evil.
Damn. Is it Steve Jobs?
No, it's not him. I'm gonna type it in. Go ahead, y'all. Yeah.
It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't even think of it.
I know, too. I know exactly who he's talking about. I just can't get it up.
I can't even think of it.
It's them damn GMO foods, man. They're knocking me down. Fucking up my memory.
Well, that also explains the GMO foods when it comes in with the bankers' voice, doesn't it?
Fucking Monsanto.
You guys, let me tell you just what happened to me right now. I live in an apartment complex where they totally rebuilt it, and it's fabulous now. And I just had somebody just tell me when I was outside just a second ago. He was like, oh, you're talking too loud. I'm not trying to hear what you're talking about. You need to calm down.
Excuse me for 1 second, N2K. Sister Agonia, all right, someone in the chat room put Chertoff.
Chertoff? No, that ain't him. He Chertoff used to work in the government. He's the one that got all those machines, X-ray machines in the airports. No, I'm looking it up. But tell him thanks anyway. I'm trying to look it up now. It's not Chertoff. I know that man's name. I can see his face, but I can't call his name right now. Go ahead.
I hate that.
I was told to be quiet. So now I'm in my bedroom.
No, you weren't told to be quiet. I just wanted
to... Yeah, I was.
No, by he's talking about his neighbor.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
My neighbor told me, you're talking too loud. I'm not trying to hear what you're talking about.
Oh,
you need to quiet down. And guess what? He works in the leasing office.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I'm like, why did they move this guy right next door to me? I've been here for 7 years.
Mm.
Ain't nobody wanted to live next door. And now all of a sudden, the leasing office director is next door to me. Now he's telling me to be quiet. And you know what I did? I went to my bedroom. I shut up. Okay. Well, you ain't going to hear from me again.
Ray Kurzweil.
Uh-oh. There we go.
Ray Kurzweil. That's an evil man. Woo!
Look, his last name tells you. Curse?
Oh, you want me to... Oh.
No, I said his last name
caught that.
Kurzweil.
I just caught that. That's what that... Yeah, that's who it is. Mm-hmm. And Google's just hired him to be their head man for this AI stuff you talk about and transhumanism.
And you know Google is tied to the military.
And the Bilderberg.
I didn't know to the military.
Well, all these new things that come out first always are applications in the military before they come out to civilians. All this electronic stuff, and they got stuff. Of course, I know I ain't telling y'all nothing you don't already know. Their technology is 150 years beyond our even imagination. They are up in the stratosphere with nuclear satellites, and they're doing all kind of stuff up there. And there was an old nun that told it. She used to work for the State Department. Her name is Rosalie Bertel. Her videos are still online. They're so old that the audio is not very good, but blow your mind what they've been doing. And then, you know, there's Nikola Tesla and all his, technology, which is why we have wireless and a lot of the things that we have. And, you know,
I love
the world is always changing.
I love this one.
The world is always changing, but right now, we better get some green beans, brothers and sisters. I'm telling you, because when they shut this stuff down, and this is being done purposely, this is not just happening. This is a plan.
Yeah.
And that's how they attack nations with their currency, and the reason they're attacking the U.S. is because they can't have a one-world government until they get rid of the U.S. They got to bring us down on the par with the peso.
And Mexico.
That's what they
got to
do. They can't have no one-world government.
You know what? I think what really happened is their shit's collapsing on them, though. That's why they're
doing it. It's being collapsed. They're doing it on purpose.
What she's saying is, Rob, what she's saying, Ron, is they're collapsing it on purpose.
I know that. I've said the same thing. Exactly. They got it all in the plan. But I'm saying it's falling off. But at the same time, they're doing it to us. It's happening to them, too. You see what I'm saying?
To the
ones that are trying to control it. It's falling apart on them. I know it is. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, I agree that it's out of control. They've come to the end of the line of their evil system. Well, you know what I'm saying? I agree with you, Ron, on that.
Thank you. Exactly.
I just want to recap this one more time, though.
Sure.
There's 188 nation states. 15 of those countries are gone. They don't exist anymore. 10 of those are in Africa. 25 nations on the chopping block. And that this is the source I got this from is a conference from EIR. Y'all heard of EIR, LaRouche Intelligence Review?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't like LaRouche. They put a lot of bad news on him. But let me tell you, at one time, LaRouche had the most powerful intelligence network in civilian, you know, outside of the government. He had the most powerful and still is very influential. So a lot of his webcasts, you can learn a lot about geopolitics just listening to their conferences and their presentations. But it says that these nations are purposely attacked by their currency. They got algorithms that they do on these tradings for the world market. They crash their currency, and then the IMF comes in and says, oh, you guys don't have any currency. Well, we'll hook you up with the dollar. And IMF then says, okay, but you got to sell us your water and your mahogany trees and your telephone system and, you know. That's what they do. So that's what they're doing
just
to the United States right now.
Just like buying insurance. Promised all kinds of shit as long as they're taking it from you.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And you're in church. You think you're covered by the good hands, but the good hands are fucking you dry. That's what's going on. You see what I'm saying? The good hands are fucking you behind your back.
Well, like Obamacare.
The good hands of Allstate?
It's
like Obamacare. Let me tell you something, okay? I'm retired. I've been retired for 16 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, since Obamacare, they're Social Security is taking $108 a month from me. That's over $1,200 a year. And if you don't sign up for Part B for your Medicare, then your Blue Cross Blue Shield, my subsidiary insurance coverage, won't pay anything. So you have to sign up for Part B, okay? And on top of that, Blue Cross Blue Shield makes you pay. They have a $300 per year deductible, and Social Security has a $152 deductible per year. Now, I'm paying $1,700 a year for insurance, and I don't hardly go to the doctor very often, okay? That's Obamacare for you.
It's a tax-based initiative is what it is.
Yep, that's what they say.
It's tax-based, and it's couched in health care.
Yeah, I call it an insurance and pharmaceutical bailout myself.
Well, that works, too.
You know
too.
What? May I interrupt?
Yeah,
yes,
I'll be quiet.
Hello, Cynthia.
Hi. I pay $436 a month for COBRA.
Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, COBRA's expensive.
Yeah.
COBRA kicks you in your butt.
And
it's because you have your own business?
Yes. And okay. my kids are covered. One is going to be off pretty soon. But it's three kids and myself.
Oh, my God. You must be making a six-figure income, honey.
COBRA
it's none of my business.
Yeah, Sister Agonia.
Huh?
COBRA doesn't care. You know, when you leave off of a job or anything and you can go to COBRA to still have medical coverage.
Uh-huh.
COBRA is so expensive.
Wow.
You know, it doesn't matter what your income is. You know, you could be making minimum wage, but if you switch to COBRA, it's going to kick you behind.
Let me ask Cynthia a question. Let me ask Cynthia a question when she's done.
No, I was paying the same thing on my job. So it really didn't increase, but it's still, you know, that's a lot of money, $136. And like yourself, we don't really go to the doctor that much.
Yeah. Wow,
now, Cynthia, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you own your own business?
I do. I'm a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
You're a realtor. So you're an independent contractor, for the sake of a better word. So, being that you are an independent contractor, you have to actually pay for health care, right?
Correct.
Okay. With that being said, with the Obamacare and how that has trickled down into your particular situation, that's not a situation that I'm involved in, and I think a lot of other people are involved in, where we actually work for somebody, so we're not really feeling the brunt of it. Do you feel that the initiative for the Obamacare is more detrimental to people who have to actually buy health care as opposed to those who are afforded health care through their jobs?
I honestly am not abreast on Obamacare because I've never even looked into it, primarily because I like PPOs. I like to have my own insurance. You know, I like to choose my own physician. So I'm not even, you know, knowing anything about Obamacare, to be honest with you.
It's horrible, Cynthia. It's horrible. It's going to get worse. And if I may interject, I know he was asking you the question, but it's going to affect everybody. And it's going to affect everybody in different ways. Like, for instance, those who are working for corporations on a, you know, 9-to-5 job or whatever, clock in, clock out, whichever one, a lot of companies have stated that when they enforce Obamacare, people who are guaranteed 40 hours a week will be working 30 hours a week because the Obamacare, if any company, that you, if you get over 30 hours, they have to give you Obamacare. So they're going to reduce the hours.
Well, Sister Agonia and everyone else, did you see where UPS has dropped the spousal care?
Yes, I heard that. A whole bunch. thousands. Wasn't it hundreds of thousands of people they dropped?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for UPS for 15 years.
Wow. It's going to affect everybody. And another thing they're doing, too, is they kind of like building a profile on you. Like they try to push these pharmaceuticals on you if you don't want them. And they write in the little computer, oh, she don't want to be on no medicine. She didn't do this. She didn't take this test. She won't take this pill. So then, see, don't y'all remember when they had on the front cover of Time magazine the article called Killing Granny? Okay, that's what they – if you don't do what they tell you to do, then they'll say, okay, well, you don't get this treatment, you don't get that treatment, you don't get – like you told me about Antoinette, about the 15-year-old boy.
Yes.
That's what they're doing now. It's based on your words.
Let me ask you guys a question. Let me ask you guys a question. This is for the whole panel. Everybody was all excited about the fact that we got a black president. Now
he looked black. That's about all.
Okay. After the second term, where we can actually see the policies that are coming into effect, do you feel that this particular president, and this is how I feel, who's towing the company line and he's doing what all politicians do, or are you into the whole line of thinking, man, we got a black president. This is the first thing that happened. It's wonderful. From a political standpoint, how do you view it? Does it really mean anything? Or is
Can
really
I please,
the same
please
game
answer
again?
That question? May I please answer it?
Yes, Sister Agonia.
Absolutely.
Yes, please do.
I told you who he was before he got voted in. If you was listening, when they start talking the war stuff about he was going to increase Afghanistan, that was the cue. He's the warmonger, and he's a master at neuro-linguistic programming, meaning he talks and don't say shit.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he does do that.
Wait a minute. Let me make sure I got that right. Neuro-linguistic
programming.
Programming.
You betcha.
Yeah.
I got to use that one.
Bullshit.
He didn't lie to anybody. He told you who he was, and he told you what he was going to do. Now, if you don't think the United States has changed since he got in, I got news for you. It's a whole lot of change we didn't have. He
yes,
didn't tell you what kind of change he was going to give you.
That's right. That is so true.
Coded, but the center is really fucked up, Nancy.
And you know what's even worse, Ron? Nobody asked him what kind of change he was going to give us.
Yes, we
assumed.
Exactly. We assumed.
The sheeple always follow the herder, you know.
Guess what, my sister? Guess what he said? There's going to be a change.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he said.
That's right.
Nobody asked him what kind of change. Nobody asked for no details. They was all mesmerized because he's a master. I'm telling you, he's a master, okay? He's a master. Whoa, yeah. I seen through him. I don't know why. I don't think I'm smart, okay? I just study and read, that's all. And I listened to him very carefully. And I had to get up and almost I had to leave the room, go outside. I almost cried because in my soul, I knew this is going to be disastrous. Now, and why? Because what it does is divides the country right down the middle. You got people who are miseducated, uninformed, struggling, disenfranchised. So you get people like the Obama phone lady. Remember her?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, they bought into the hype. Oh, we're going to get free lunch. We're going to get this. We're going to get that. Well, they've been four generations been disenfranchised from the, you know, everybody that took economics 101 knows you got to have a body of unemployed people for capitalism to work.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think they keep the courts and
that.
The jails? How do you think they keep the courts and the jails filled up?
Right.
Wow. That's
right.
Exactly how they keep the courts and the jails filled up.
Keep them uninformed.
Huh?
They don't know they're fucking up. Period. Don't
you keep
even
them stupid.
Yeah,
keep them down on the farm.
That's right. Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Thank
That's
you.
A pool of unutilized workers that they can use. Now, I can
Thank
tell you the history on
Thank
me.
You. Thank you.
I'm 65 years old, and in 1960, when did I go in there? I was 19 years old. I retired in 1993.
That was roughly 1965, between 65 and 75.
Okay, and the government had to force General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, all the big three and the big corporations, to hire black people, okay? And the reason they had to do that was because of the Vietnam War. And when we went, when I went in there at 19 years old, I was making $2 and something an hour, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
You could only get a janitor's job. That they wasn't hiring you for the line or anything like that, okay, at that time. Now, when I left there, I was making $22 an hour.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But, and that ain't no money. I know that. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying for, you know, a day, you know, regular factory worker, that's pretty good loot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I wasn't educated enough to know what to do with it. But then it really doesn't matter because there are people who have been educated that did all the right things, went to college, got their degrees, had their 401Ks, and look what happened. They done lost their homes, all of this stuff because of fraud.
Yeah.
I said that in the beginning of the 401K plan. I said, you're fucked if you fuck with it. Off Jump Street, the day one it started, and everybody I know that did it. I've had friends of mine that got it. Man, they're going to match me dollar for dollar. I said, man, I'm going to tell you what, it's a bullshit story. They're gambling with their fucking money, and they're going to lose it. And they never put a nickel of theirs in it, ever.
Well, and see, that was probably when they invented the 401K. That was the forerunner of the derivatives.
Right.
They were desperate way back then. Oh, we got to have a pool of money.
Right.
You see?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
And now they're going to take our pensions. They say they're going to take our pensions, Ron.
They're going to take everything. They ain't stopping there. The plan book is written, take it all. Incrementally.
And let me tell you guys what I did when I was with the Teamsters, and then I branched off, and then I left the Bay Area, which is Oakland, San Francisco, and I came to Georgia. So I got hooked up with this company, right? So I put money in the 401K plan. Now, what I did was I went with the old money. I went with Goldman Sachs. I went with Lehman Brothers. I went with J.P. Morgan for my 401K.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was prior to them just banking out and just going, you know what, we're just going to just kill everything. So I was making this money with Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Lehman Brothers, then all of a sudden, I saw this shit on the news, and they were saying, the whole banking industry is collapsing. And then I get my quarterly report, my shit's in the nosedive. Now, I can't, in the way this financial stuff works, you can't just call a guy and he just pulls you out. It's going to take some time for him to pull you out. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to ride with it. This is old money. This is historic money. They're going to figure this out. And the next thing I know, my whole 401K just bottomed out.
I know, because you know what, brother? If you go back to the Great Depression, they never let the little man or the working man in the stock market until it's in trouble.
Right.
They never let us in until it's in trouble.
But let me finish, sister. What happened was, I was like, oh, my shit is bobbing them out. Let me get out of here. So I'm, you know, I got 50% tied into the domestic market. And then I got the other 50% tied into the foreign market. So I'm like, oh, man, I need to get out of this. But you can't make enough phone calls to get you out. It's not going to happen because you got to call and, you know, I don't have that type of money where everybody's going to stop what they're doing and get my money out of there.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do that. They're going to be like, okay, well, you got to wait and we'll take care of you. Next thing I know, Obama is running for president, and then he gets elected, and then Wall Street gets a bailout, and then my money goes back up, but it doesn't go back up to the tune of what I lost.
Well,
so when
some
I,
people love
when I cashed out, when I cashed out, I only got a quarter of what I had when I put in.
And do you know how blessed, and do you know how blessed you are? Do you know how blessed you are? You got a quarter. Some people have lost everything, including their house,
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
everything.
Energy. Because, like I said, I work in the housing market, but I also work
mm-hmm.
in the mortgage industry. And people don't realize right now investors are buying, so property value is going up, and it's inflating again. You just, especially in California, because that's where I am, and it's just something that's not even real. And I worked in the housing market, and the company that I worked for prior, the head people, the CEO, they pulled all their money out of the stock, out of their stocks. They sold them. Not all of it, but like millions of dollars. And that was right before the housing market crashed. So
right.
they, to me, they did something similar to like Martha Stewart, where they got a tip, and you're not really supposed to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congressmen and representatives get insider trading all the time. They can legally do that.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Right.
They can legally fucking do that. But we do it,
and
you're going to prison. Yeah, see, the game changes on us.
They absolutely do it.
Is that Cynthia?
But I want to I want to hear what happened in regards to what she's saying, Cynthia. What happened as a result of that?
Well, they got their money, and I'm just blessed because I left the company, and I did take out my 401k, but the government took over 30 something percent of my money because I didn't roll it over.
I didn't do that shit.
It's a rigged game. Cynthia, do you know what's going on? I'm in Florida, and as you know, being a realtor, Florida was what I think the second hardest hit in the real estate
crash. We closed on you guys like fast.
Huh?
California was hit the hardest.
No, I didn't say Florida was hit the hardest. I said the second hardest.
Yeah, they were hit pretty hard.
I'm telling you right now, there's certain states because of the way that the industry is run. Once we put you in default, we'll never bring you out. Because
I know they're playing that game, refi game. The only reason why they're doing that is to get a new contract so you can't go and get them on fraud because of MERS. But I want to tell you what's going on in Florida, okay? I got a girlfriend that's a real estate agent and a broker, and she just moved down here, so I was going around with her, so she's checking out the landscape, right? Well, guess what we discovered? In the area where I live at, they got like $350,000 houses all around, and they all got rental signs in front of them because you know what's going on? All the people that pull their money out that you're talking about are now buying all these houses up for cash, and they're forming rental companies.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. See, they're going to take us back to feudal days when nobody don't own no property except the big boys.
Exactly.
You know, remember how I told you that my son's my granddaughter's great-grandmother, how she had, you know, summer property down there, a condo.
Mm-hmm.
And she would go down every year for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And she sold it this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because the market is back up, but it's inflated, and it's not real.
Artificial.
What's going to happen is people are going to start, you know, all that equity again, take money out, and they're going to end up losing. There's so many shadow foreclosures across America. There's certain states like New York, New Jersey, California, even Florida especially, other states where we're just holding on to it. These people haven't paid their mortgage for 7 years, and they think that they're still going to be in their house. No, the bank just doesn't want to close on them all at one time.
Because the banks can't put that property that they own or what's called real estate owned back on the market because it will expose the fact that all the banks are insolvent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called shadow.
So
I didn't hear what she said.
Women.
What'd you say, Cynthia?
That's why it's called
shadow,
what?
Shadow property.
Oh, okay. Have you heard of a book called CloudedTitle.com?
No.
Oh, you got to get that book, Cynthia. It's a bombshell. All
let me ask
the dirt.
A question. Let me ask a question. Do you women share this with men so that we can all... Because you women, I'm listening to the show tonight, and you women are exceptional. And I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, and I'm not trying to, you know, trying to be something that I'm not, but you guys are educating me, and I have no problem admitting that. The thing that I'm asking is that are you sharing this information with the rest of those who are receptive to it? Or are we just not receptive? Are we just not listening?
Well, the way I do it... Oh, go ahead. Whoever was talking, go ahead. I talked enough.
I apologize for interrupting you.
No, you're fine.
Okay. The way I see it is, like you said, that gentleman interrupted you and he said that you were talking too loud. There's so many people that don't necessarily want to hear. Like, I sit back and I listen a lot because I'd like to be a sponge. You know, anything that I can learn, I'll definitely be up for that. So it's just the majority of people, they don't want to hear it. They have other things on their mind.
Yeah.
I'm like Cynthia.
You're saying that nobody wants to listen to what you have to say, Cynthia?
Many people are afraid.
Maybe that's what it is, sister.
It's fear. And I do the same thing Cynthia does, but because I used to be a real zealot, you know what I mean? People would disperse when they seen me coming, okay? I'm like, okay, you guys, you got to read this. You got to listen to this. Okay, people don't want to hear it. So what I learned how to do is, you know, just share with people who are open, and that's it. Most of mine is on the Internet because I've only been in Florida for 2 years, and I don't know a lot of people here. But when I go out to the store, like I tell you something that I did, and it shocked me, scared me to death, okay? It was just automatic. I went in Walmart. I got one of these $10 reward checks you get, like, you know, from these companies like TJ Maxx and stuff like that. And I went in there to cash my little check, and they told me to put my Social Security number in there. I said, no. I said, that you're not supposed to use your Social Security number for personal identification. They said, well, this is our system. I said, well, it's the law. If the Social Security Administration says that you can be fined $10,000 for even asking me for my Social Security number. Okay? And they had five supervisors come up there looking at me like I was crazy, and I wasn't belligerent or anything. I told the lady, I said, it's not personal, it's the law. And do you know they cashed my check and let me get out of there? And I went and sat in my car and said, what the hell did I just do?
You guys, let me share something with you from a male standpoint. My mother never taught me about finance, and my mother had a high school education. I have a college education, and that woman runs circles around me when it comes to finance. She bought a house for $60,000 and sold her house for $475,000. And to this day, my mom has never... She just assumed that because I went to college, I did all that shit I was supposed to do. Now, I didn't know the game like she knew it. And I look back on it, and then I listen to you guys. I listen to you, and I listen to Cynthia, and you guys remind me of my mother because y'all got the game sold up. And I'm like, okay, at what point do women tell men, not the men who are the movers and shakers, but just men, ordinary men, how to run this financial game? Man, because y'all are so sophisticated in this. And I'm listening to this, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And I'm like, man, that sounds so much like my mother. And my mother is sitting on stacks, and my mother cries broke every day.
Mm-hmm.
She living in a five-bedroom house with her husband. I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. I don't live with her. I'm across the country. She lives in a five-bedroom house with her husband. And she tells me, well, Patrick, I'm broke. I can't do that. And I know better. And I know what she's talking about. But at the same time, what I'm asking you guys is, do you guys give this information to other men so they can get it together?
Well, I try, and if someone is open, then I share. But if they don't, and I haven't ran across very many that really want to be bothered with it. You know, it's like, you know.
They don't even care.
There's some. No, see, you know what? I stopped talking about the people that don't care and all that. Because, see, there different people are in different circumstances. You can only, you know, our life circumstances determine what we can do. I mean, you know, if you're trying to keep a tuna fish sandwich on the table to feed your kids, you don't have time to sit up. I'm retired. I sit up here and look at and listen at these videos that people wouldn't even think about. Like I told you, I'd be listening at LaRouche and people that you wouldn't even, like, you would think that was boring. And that's only because I have a thirst for understanding. I just want to understand. I don't want to live a lie. I want to know the truth. You know what I'm saying? So don't beat people down that don't want to know, because there's different reasons why they don't want to know. They're afraid. They don't have time to think about, you know what I'm saying? They're under so much stress. You know, so have compassion for people that are not willing to look in the face, because, see, it's like you almost go down an abyss, and it's scary. I'm over the fear now. I went through that phase of being scared to death, but I'm over that now, because I realize no matter what happens, your ass gonna die anyway. So hey,
and Sister Gonya, let me ask you Sister Gonya, do you think the seminar that we're working on for next week, will that help to answer some questions?
Yes, that's going to be dynamite, and I think that's going to open up our minds, and I can't wait for us to discuss, because I like to learn from other people. Because, you know, they got an old saying in Ghana, three heads are better than one. You know what I'm saying? You mm-hmm. might miss
are
a whole
lot. Are
you
Guyanese? Are you Guyanese?
No, I just lived there for 3.5 years, that's all.
Okay. Cynthia, based on the question that I asked, that our beloved sister just answered, how do you feel about that?
I definitely chime in to what she said, but I don't really, other than business related, I don't really interact with many other people. I mean, if you ask people in the town that I live in, they would honestly say that I'm just quiet, you know. I'll speak when I'm spoken to, but I don't necessarily just try to go out of my way.
Excuse me.
Have men, let me ask you another question, both of you, and this is for you too, Antoinette. Have men turned themselves off to learning from a woman who, I was raised in a completely different era where women were supreme, not in the sense that they were the money earners or they were the dictators of what went on in the family, in the sense that they were superior spiritually and they held together the family unit. So I guess my question is, do you feel that men don't respect that anymore, the spiritual element of the woman? Because I still do. I cling to that, and it's not doing me a whole lot of good, because I'm running across a lot of women who aren't even connected spiritually. However, I just wanted to know, do you feel that men fall short of that?
If I can answer, the men in my family are very dominant. All of my uncles are ministers. I mean, I've been a pastor's assistant. And so I know, like, spiritually what you're speaking of. And if I find a person who isn't, it's just a total turnoff. And the guys that I do meet that are, I think that they appreciate my knowledge.
Okay. My sister who's on the phone, you gonna
I was trying to wait for Antoinette. You know, let somebody else get a word in edgewise. I know I can talk, so I was just trying to hold back. And Cynthia, please excuse me if I'm burning your ears up like Ron, okay?
No, I love it. Believe me, you have given me so many things that I'm going to research. And I don't have the internet, so I have to get to the library.
Okay.
Antoinette.
My family, well, see, I grew up in a very spiritual family, you know, as a whole, you know, the whole unit, you know, not just within with my parents. But my parents were also different in the fact that they did not force religion on us. My father went to church. My mother later became a Jehovah's Witness. And, you know, but I had that background because of my grandmother on my father's side who kept me in church when I was younger. But then when I got old enough, I did it on my own. So, you know, my father went to church, my mother went to the Kingdom Hall, and, you know, that was it. So, I don't know, I mean, so I guess in a lot of ways maybe my mother was the more spiritually guided one, because when it came to the holidays and things like that, you know, my mother was no Christmas tree, you know, she no longer did those things and stuff like that, but, you know, my dad still held on to his practices and my mother held on to hers, and they lived in the house together.
Mm-hmm.
There's separate routes on Sundays.
I'm sorry. What did I miss? I was.
You missed religion. Oh, yeah,
man. Ron, please. Ron.
Hey, look here, man. Miley Cyrus was almost naked, and I think the little kid is going to win America's Got Talent. And I'm looking to get me a new car. And I'm going to go because of bling bling. And,
this is why as men, we get a bad name. We're talking about some real serious stuff here.
Okay, well, listen, I have to make an announcement, folks. Now, we enjoyed y'all tremendously. I really and truly enjoyed this show. I have to say this is really one of our best shows.
And I want Cynthia and my lady back, the queen, the quintessential female, not to discredit you, my sister in any way, but, man, those females are kicking knowledge. They're kicking serious knowledge.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I said, was you getting ready? You're announcing that it's over?
Well, we have 14 minutes left, and I wanted to give everyone a chance to make closing statements before BTR kicks us off, because we're in the overtime, and when they go to shut it down, they just shut it down.
Okay.
Yes, I wanted to thank everyone for coming, the ones that were here that had left, and the ones that will later listen to this in archives. You know, this is truly a treat. And to encourage everyone, you know, not only to come back tomorrow, of course, but next week, next Monday, we're starting a seminar that is going to be phenomenal. You know, you think that you got something out of this today, you are, and truly, truly educated is coming next week. So I want to thank you all for that, encourage you to come next week. And I want to give everyone closing statements now before we're cut off. And I'm going to start with Cynthia because you came in late, Cynthia. So I'm going to let you start, and then we'll go to N2K, Sister Agonia, and then Ron, Rick.
No, I'm always last.
Yes, you are. Oh. Let Cynthia speak now, dear.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be quiet.
Thank you so much. And it was definitely a wonderful show. And I didn't come in late. I've been listening for like 2-3 hours or whatever it was. But I like to just sit back and listen. So thank you to the kings and queens out there that gave me so much knowledge. I appreciate it. And, you know, I love to listen to your show, Ron.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Definitely. Glad to hear you. Glad to have you with us. Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm glad this helps. It's the whole idea of it. Really. The whole idea of this. But go ahead, Cynthia. It's yours, sweetie.
No. That was it. I'm just going to go eat my green beans because I'm on a fast for the next few days.
Okay. And 2K?
Take it away, N2K.
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to say that this is probably one of the best shows that I've ever heard, and I just feel honored that I got a chance to listen to both of those beautiful queens, and you too, Antoinette.
Well, thank you.
All three of you are what's right with the world. And as a man, that's what we look for, even in spite of all the crap that we talk and the obnoxiousness that we display and all the belligerent attitudes that we have. Man, if I had just one of you in my life, Mount Everest wouldn't even be Mount Everest. I would just knock it the hell over. And that's what men do. They look for, and women are the guiding light in everything that we do. And I'm just glad that we had this opportunity, and I just hope that both of them come back and we can share the same type of interaction and just be of one accord. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, N2K. Sister Agonia?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I want to compliment you all, both the hostess and the host, for your show, and thank you for allowing me to share my little tidbits in here. It's been stimulating, and I appreciate the questions from Brother, how do you say his name, the one that was just speaking? I keep messing it up.
It's N2K. It's N2K. I just shortened it up.
Yes, and I just, it was a joy when I got a chance to speak with Ron and you together today. And Cynthia,
yes,
thank you for everything you and everybody who and you know, brought up questions. Pumpkin 13, everybody. It's just been enlightening, and I'm just thankful that I known Antoinette for a long time, and she's just a wonderful hostess.
This is my mentor, y'all.
Oh,
this is my mentor.
It.
This is my teacher. She has been for years. I just love her.
No,
I mean, y'all just don't know how much I just love her and appreciate her.
Well, thank you. But I don't like to think of myself as a teacher because I'm still a student. I just like to share information. That's all.
Yes.
And we teach ourselves. You can't really teach adults anything because the mind has to be open and want to receive to learn anything. So you can't really teach an adult anything. And I think that the biggest thing that's important for me to say about this, I'm just so excited about the document that's going to be studied next week, is because we got to do this for the children, man. We got to do this for the children, because if we don't, these people are planning on bringing the real plantation back, and we ain't going to be picking cotton. It's going to be synthetic something.
Yeah.
These people are crazy, okay? They mean business. So that's all I have to say. I'm just looking forward to the study, because sometimes when you take in all this information, to me it's helpful to be able to hear other people's thoughts and to share, and sometimes you get more understanding just by being able to express what you think you've learned.
Yes.
You know, so that's all I have to say. So
Is Perry show on? Is Perry show on?
Yes, we're going to let Ron make his remarks.
Okay.
Okay,
well, the beloved sister and Cynthia, go to Perry's show. We all go over there. Now, that's a whole different show. There's no rules. It's off the chain. Just to give you guys a briefer, it's not a controlled environment. It's a very uncontrolled environment. Ron, take it away.
Okay. yeah, you're right about that. I'm not a controller. I'm really not in the show. I just like to have respect. I like to have everybody have respect because we're talking serious topics, serious subjects, and that's what people need to hear. But anyway, I want to throw it out there to everybody. I want to thank everybody that's been here, everybody's listening, everybody in the archives who listen to this show right now. You're really going to enjoy it and definitely hook up with us. But I definitely have to give my shout-out to Sister Agonia. You are a true blessing. You are a true blessing. I want to talk to you some more. I really do. You, man, I just, you know, it blows me away to talk to somebody that's been on the same page with me. You know, it's crazy. I mean, I don't get to talk to too many people like you. You know, we completely understand what we're talking about, and we know. And that's, you know, I don't know at all. I'm a student still myself, but I want to learn from you. And if I can help you with anything I can, I'll get it for you, whatever it takes. You know,
perfectly welcome to get my telephone number from Antoinette.
Well, I sure appreciate that.
She's 65. I'm in love. I need that on mine.
Don't be moving on my shit. Don't be moving it on me, man.
Thank you for inviting me up to Perry's show, but this 65-year-old sister's getting ready to go to bed.
Oh,
yes, so
I have to
you up past your bedtime because I know you're usually down by this time. But I thank you for having me.
I got some 40 and 65-year-olds. See, y'all about to pull me out the blanket.
Let me finish my show, brother. All right, here we go. Anyway, yeah, but thank you, Sister Agonia. I definitely got to talk to you tomorrow for sure. Nancy, you're always my sweetheart. You always will be. I love you dearly. And, you know, NGK, I love you, your brother, and everybody else. I love you guys. And I hope you come back. I mean, I'm not looking for ratings. I'm not making no money at this. You know, I pay the bill for this to make sure this happens for everybody. And we'll keep continuing on. And hopefully we'll reach other people that will get it. You're hoping they catch on to some little bit of this information. They need it. They need the information.
Sister Adonia, sometimes I act like I got some sense, and then sometimes I'm ghetto fabulous. So,
me too. That's why I love Ron Rick. that's my kind of man right there.
It just depends on when you catch me, okay? I can get on that intellectual, spiritual thing, but then when somebody starts, you know, clamming me up, I got to do that ghetto thing.
Sister Agonia, remember the man that you heard that was talking from the show that I sent you to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
Say
it again.
N2K. Remember that I gave you to listen to?
Yes.
And you heard Ron and you heard the other gentleman?
Yes.
N2K is the other gentleman that you heard, the one that you
speak
to. Yeah,
I recognize his voice. He has a very distinct voice. Yes, very intelligent. Yes, I recognize you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, kids, it's been a great show. I'm gonna play a song. I think you're all going to enjoy it a lot in the show.
Okay, promote next week's show, Ron.
We'll see you tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
Ron?
But next week, definitely got to be here for this seminar coming up because you're going to love this. This will blow your mind. This will open your brain, your eyes, your brain so wide you don't have to think no more. You will definitely get on track and get the game. Be able to say it all.
Yes, and then, Ron, let me add one more thing. Now, then we're going to have one for the following week. It's going to be on that seven-hour clip that...
Oh, Michael Passio. Mark Passio.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, that's going to
blow
we'll it up,
So we'll have another
too.
One for the following week that will...
We're definitely going to be smoking the airwaves on the internet. We're going to light up the internet really
good
on that.
Yes, we are.
So, you know, as long as they don't kick us off or shut us down, we're going to rock it. We're going to practice that first.
So everyone should know that for next week, you're going to need pencil and paper. You know, take your notes and be prepared.
And you buy you buy transcripts from BTR, but they don't give me a cut of the money. That's bullshit. But
good night. Okay, you're down to 2 minutes, Ron.
All right, kick the song. I love you all. I'll see you a little later.
Love you all,
okay,
too.
Thank you,
good
everyone,
night.
For coming. We really appreciate you, every one of y'all.
And thank you, Infinite, for inviting me, man. This is wonderful.
Oh, Sister Agonia, thank you so much for coming. I truly appreciate it.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
And to the buffalo, the one rule of playing, like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain. Looking for the rain. Just like the city on the coastline, and a nation that just can't stand much more.